And on. And I should be getting a reading on this. Do I have a reading on this? Yes, I do. Okay. Well, first of all, I want to welcome you guys to 1973 to 2008. What is that? That's 27. No, wait.
35
years. Mm-hmm. This is the 35th annual Solstice Talk. Continually, this started in Princeton in 1973 at Ken Nagus's house. At the time, I was 22 years old. And it started off where we were, it was just a demonstration. I was just doing a simple demonstration of how you can put a natal position into an ingress type chart and predict off of it. And how to do those predictions, and a little bit about the solstice itself, and everybody went wacko over the personal prediction part. So the next year, it became a full bore workshop, and everybody signed up for personal readings. I was doing these 10-minute readings as well as the solstice work itself. In the last 5 or 6, what is it? How long has it been since I split that off now? Maybe 10 years. 10 years. I stopped integrating it because the workshop would start at 10 in the morning and generally end around 1 o'clock in the night because I'd be doing 30. Yeah, I'd be doing well in New Jersey. I would be doing 30 readings or so, and I'd have the talk done, and I'd start at 10 o'clock. The talk would be done by like 12:30 or whatever. Take a break, and then I'd start doing the reading. So everybody would stay to watch the reading to see what I was doing, and then they'd peter out, you know, just keep petering out as the day went on. And in New Jersey, you could shut all the lights. In New Jersey, it got so large that I had to open up to the North Jersey chapter, and then I had to open up to a group out in Clinton, and then I was doing one in Manhattan, and I was getting sick every year. And coming back, and then I opened up one here in the mid-80s, and I just got totally sick. And to be perfectly honest, when prior to Bush getting elected, Arch Crawford and I, and I didn't get to call Crawford this year, he called me last night, but Arch Crawford and I, we would gab every time something was going on, because he was starting to call me up for his, when he would work on his newsletter, just to, you know, another voice to figure, you know, to bounce ideas against. So we were working in August of 2000, prior to the election, and we began to notice massive amounts of Mars and Mercury combinations running with Kronos up in the late mutables. And we were like getting quite concerned about this sort of stuff. After Bush was elected and prior to 9/11, I mean, the interesting thing was during the election with Bush, we did the workshop here. And I think at the time I was saying, well, you get all this military stuff going in. It must be those ballots in Florida from the guys overseas. Mm-hmm. Right? Right. But then little did we really realize that what did occur in this country. No. And what really occurred in this country was we literally did have a military coup. All right? It was a military coup that influenced the courts and whatnot. In 2002, I realized that when Hades was running with the Kronos, that I better shut up. Seriously. And I shut down New Jersey, and I altogether, I stopped doing the talks down there after a Saturn return, and just faded them back up here, and never truly would publicize the talk itself too much, except for the handful of folks that, you know, would get to know about it and remember it. And, if there's need to be more chairs, go just screw around the shop and get them, okay? Okay, and you gotta hit those people as they come in. All right. What was it? So in 2002, we just shut down New Jersey altogether in Manhattan, and we were just doing it up here where I could be still loose and frank in my discussions without having to worry about somebody looking over my shoulder. Now, of course, with the Saturn and Uranus opposition, we have a new regime coming in. And, sort of. It's the damage has already been done. And we only, basically all Mr. Obama is going to be able to do is be literally a caretaker government. In other words, it's going to be a benign, bureaucratic government that means well, but they're not going to be able to accomplish very much. particularly, you know, what was it, Friedman in his column today in the newspaper from the New York Times, the columnist, was calling for them to swear Obama in right now like they did JFK, or at least to make ratify all of his appointments, you know, because otherwise the uncertainty in the market for 2 months is a real drag. But the truth is, as far as Crawford and I are concerned on the financial end of things, the panic part is over. You know, the financial markets are going to be somewhat stabilized for a while, all right? But the damage, an incredible amount of damage, not just to your IRAs and the fact that by January, you know, one out of three storefronts is going to be empty, but the damage is severe and widespread because of what happens next. Now, if you look at this chart, and you'll see, we've got that Saturn-Neptune opposition has just passed. It was exact on election day, right? And obviously the meaning on that in the books is the end of a regime, a turnover in regimes. It also means errors in prediction for astrology. All right, we have Saturn and Uranus happening. It's errors in prediction. And I have to be careful here with how we extrapolate the year because it's such an intense year. All right. First of all, I've had to fight my own knee-jerk reactions on this. My gut has been telling me for the last 3 months that the period from February to October that I mentioned in Boston and that we're going to talk about as well here a little bit is like, well, it's just the effects of the financial stuff getting worse and worse and worse kind of thing. You know, the effects get deeper and more pervasive. But when I do the long range work on this stuff, first 30 years ago and then in the last 15, by Baltimore NCGR conference, I had to do a little minute talk with Madeline and a bunch of other panelists. And, you know, Madeline and I got up there and we said, hey, the world's going to go down the tubes as faster than a kid down a sliding pond. And everybody else was like, oh, the Jupiter-Pluto's on the cardinals is going to be a wonderful time. You know, what was that? The guy from Planet Waves was just like jumping around about it. And, oh, the Earth's going to go through the galactic center. And this is the greatest thing since ice cream. We're going to have a good time. And then here's, you know, Madeline and I are, you know, doom and gloom isn't very popular. You know, people want to be uplifted. But we did it. And at the time, I had already put together the breakdown of how these things would occur. Now, the Saturn-Uranus comes into play, and as an astrologer, you get affected by it, and I want to change my prediction. But I can't. Or else I'll be wrong. I'll be doing a knee-jerk reaction. So I have to stay with my original thesis, even though it feels irritating to do it, to be perfectly honest.
If you were to change your prediction, what
I would just no. It was just going. It was melding into the idea that the financial stuff would just continue to decay, and that it would just be harder and harder. The Pluto Hades opposition that caused this setup for this stuff, and then the Pluto Hades hits the cardinals and it manifests. Oh. But I think it's a larger. You know, the earlier prediction cycle was that this is a larger issue, and the general story is this. The finances collapse, right? And instead of keeping the guys at GM having a job for putting us $7 trillion in the hole, we rewarded Wall Street by bailing them out. That means that we spent that money going after paper, not going after shoring up things or infrastructure projects. Do you realize the money put into AIG alone would build a national high-speed rail network complete in this country that would rival Europe's? You know, just that one single bailout alone. So a lot of the bailout is guaranteed, but the next round of it that's coming up now, God bless, the next round of it that's coming up now has to do with actually printing the money and putting the money out there. So we'll talk about the financial aspects of it, why the dollar is appreciating at the moment and why it's going to go into an inflation cycle soon. But it's going to be a strange inflation cycle. It isn't like too many goods, too many dollars chasing too few goods. It's just the opposite, where plenty of goods, no money to buy it, and the price has to go up because the dollar gets useless, right, once people stop investing in the U.S. treasuries. Now, the Fed is just got a license to print money. I mean, we gave that, you know, well, we'll get back to that stuff. On the other part of things is, by blowing it all away, by blowing our potential resources while it's still credible, and this is the thing, the world is still looking to us. This is why we're actually, our failure, even though we're the guys that poisoned the world financially, our failure is about 35 to 40% down on the markets. The rest of the world currently is 50 to 60% down and has been so since January. This was not put in the news very often, how badly the Asian markets have stumbled, how much the Chinese are relying upon our treasuries as sources for their savings. The entire Chinese savings is in U.S. treasuries, and a good deal of the Japanese savings as well. They can't afford to let the dollar fail, or else their economies are instantly gone. So it's a real strange environment. But the bottom line is, our credibility now is on the line on a financial basis. Hi, Karen. Our credibility is on the line on a financial basis, and the confidence on that is another story. Now, the reason I bring this up is that the next phase has to do with basically disasters and adjusting to the disasters. The scene is basically this. We've blown the amount of money we would have had to respond to the next series of events, which is just going to make them all that much worse. The role model here is a Katrina kind of situation without FEMA having limitless pockets. So, you know, New Orleans is still a mess. They don't talk much about Houston, but Houston was a rich city. But Houston got knocked out. We saw it on the internet in the sense that right after that storm hit, internet traffic slowed and was getting very spotty because there's so many server farms that were knocked out of electricity in the Houston area. You know, so the internet is put together such that, you know, you could take out 90% of it, and if there's still a wire anywhere, it will still function. You know, it's like it's very indestructible. It was put together by the Department of Defense just for a nuclear attack. If it knocked everything out, can they still have command and control? And then it got old and redundant, so they turned it over to the public. You know, basically, the internet is like an old army base given to the public, and everybody's inhabiting it, putting, you know, art studios in and stuff like that, instead of, you know, except we're using it for commerce and everything else. But the internet is a big vulnerability in the world, because should it have a decay or a failure or anything like that, well, it isn't that you don't get to shop at Amazon anymore. Huge systems go down. Things that run dams and hydroelectric power and regulate everything have all been automated and sent off into this area. So if and when whatever materials begin to occur in February, right, and we'll talk about the projection of where and what that's going to be, we won't be able to respond to it except militarily. And even the military isn't very good. But it shows very strong in the U.S. thing. Notice that Boston is on the same axis as Washington, and when we go to Washington, we will have this near the same ascendant. You'll note that the Mars is rising. And so for the U.S. and the East Coast, it's Mars time. All right, which means that continual reliance upon what it is the U.S. can do. And note for Washington, Boston, we'll get down to Washington in a minute, that the Moon is angular and the Mars is angular. That this is the military of the people, this is the militia, and all that kind of stuff. All right? Now, the other major thing about this solstice that's very striking is the fact that the sun is standing with the conjunction of Pluto on the cardinal axis, and Pluto is now in Capricorn pretty much for good. I mean, it's not coming back, at least not in our lifetimes. And this does presage a large change in the world. The Saturn-Uranus presaged... You can come over here. You can come over here if you want. Come on, Debbie. You sit over here. You just got to hold this in your lap and don't breathe on it. Oh, All right, they're still, everybody's sort of still mixing in here. My God, we have a large crowd for one, for something that wasn't too well publicized. By the way, once again, thank Valerie for her impetus in getting all of this stuff going. Ray White for doing recording and logistics and making sure a lot of other stuff is going. And Astrolabe, of course, for allowing us all to use this stuff. At any rate, so we won't have the wherewithal to respond to these events and stuff like that, because at that point in time, our finances will be much less credible in the world, so we won't be able to go in there and dump funds credibly. All right, it's my sense about that stuff. The other thing to note, as I say, the U.S. is more militaristic this particular time around, which is pretty obvious. Obama's not going to get away from that. He's going to have to still deal with that sort of stuff. And we should put Washington up just to take a peek. The thing about Boston, by the way, is you've got Mars and the Sun standing with the ascendant sort of midpoint and stuff like that. So violence in Boston is going to go up. That Mars is squaring the Saturn on that angle. And so the idea here is that tough times ahead, very radical strains as well. But it's a popular place. They're building a movie studio in Plymouth. There's more movies and media being shot in Boston. Just like San Francisco used to be a hot town for the media and for shows and culture, and then Miami for a while was doing that sort of stuff, and then New York in the late 80s with things like Friends and stuff like that. New York is this real hot, hip place to be. It's going to be Boston, very clearly. All right, Boston gets, but with trouble. With trouble. But you can see the Neptune making the nice little trine there, and right on the trine to the meridian, right, that moon very strongly angular, popular place. The popularity reaches us. The Jupiter making a sesquiquadrate into the whole axis, right? That's all very, very nice. But if we put up Washington, right, we see it changes quite a bit. That Mars becomes the signature item here. The moon pulls far away. They're not going to maybe making movies in Washington. The media will be there, but they won't be making the movies. And you can see how that difference tends to go away. Now let's throw this Washington chart up. Now I'm a Uranian astrologer, as you guys all pretty much know, and the pizza pie chart here is a good example of things for looking at it from the day point of view. In other words, on the day, Mars is rising, on the day at this hour. We see that most of the planets here are under the ground, and only the Moon and Saturn are above, and they both hate being sect-wise above the horizon. They're nighttime crawlers. They like to work in the background, so to speak, that way. Right. So much of the material that's going on bubbles to the surface and expresses itself through that Moon and Saturn, as far as we're concerned here in the United States. Obviously, things change elsewhere. Now, something also to note, because we're going to change dials here, is the Mars rising here is also running with the planet Hades. And Hades is in Gemini setting. I'll just turn it on quick because it junks up the wheel too much to use it feasibly here. But if you look, there's the Hades setting at 27. It's running midpoint between the Sun and the Mars and the Ascendant for Washington in particular. For Washington in particular. I mean, it couldn't be any really much closer than all of this. All right, let's take these guys off. We'll look at an Astcart in a little while that will show how the East Coast is affected up through Washington, and Boston gets spared a little bit. I really believe that the New England states, through the financial crisis, will be in somewhat of a bubble compared to the rest of the nation. You know, already we're selling more houses, even though the prices are still falling, and it's the retail area that's getting decimated. But remember, the Northeast area where we come from does a lot of the military work in terms of factory work and stuff like that. So those factories will still be perking. And we also do a lot of medical and educational work, and these are unaffected by these cycles at this time. Later on, 2 years from now, they will be. The rest of the country, you know, you go to Detroit or you go to California or down south, kind of thing, entirely different combinations going on and entirely different economic material going to affect those regions. So we're in a little bit of a bubble as this goes. All right, so we're going to change over wheels here. All right, we're going to go from this day chart to a dial orientation. This is a year chart. This chart is set up on the year. The primary focus is on the zodiac itself, where on a pizza pie chart, our primary focus is on the angles, which change minute to minute. That's why you can have so many different people and characteristics on the same day, for all those babies born on that same day, right? Because the angles are the real determining factor. But when we're looking at mundane material, we're looking at larger cycles than what's happening on an intraday basis. So the ascendant and midheaven here can fly anywhere on this wheel without changing its orientation. And our visual memory stays the same. In other words, for the last 5 years, Neptune has been in this area of the chart. For the last 5 years, Uranus has been moving over here. Pluto has been moving over here. So our eyes are trained to look in those areas, and this way it makes the fast movers, Sun, Mars, Ascendant, Venus, etc., stand out a little bit more. It's kind of like when you have when they would look for planets and they would put up the two plates, so and all the stars are in the same position so that your eye only catches what moves. And that's how this works. Your eye only catches what changes on a larger basis. So, standing on the cardinal axis, which is very much important for the mundane work, right? This is what this is all about, that sun hitting that zero Capricorn, right? This chart orients us directly to that. So, first things first, right? Before we even put TMPs on and all that other jazz. We have the sun hitting off the Pluto, and we have Venus making a half square to the whole thing. So, we basically have sun, Venus, and Pluto. On the surface of it, there is hope. Venus and Pluto does mean, literally, hope. It's wishes and desires. In a natal chart, it can lead to obsessions and focus and love. You know, deep, heavy transformational stuff, as we all know. But within a mundane situation, it's hopes, wishes, and desires. It's what the people desire or want. And with the sun in there, they want to see a change in a soft, positive direction. You'll note that Jupiter is not critically strong here in that sense. It's not running with the sun, it's not running with the angles, nor is it running with the cardinals for the Washington area. It is running square the meridian. Why? Well, that's because we have a moon-Jupiter combo happening. And that's one of the other things that's going on, is we look at that moon, we get that square, and it's an applying square, and again, the people want to be happy. They don't want to be bummed out. But remember, Jupiter is an amplifier. It's both good and bad in that sense. If your basic condition is crappy and Jupiter comes strong in the chart, it's not going to necessarily save you. It might just amplify the crap itself or make it more manifest in the environment. All right. So basically with Jupiter and Moon is like a sailboat with a good keel. It wants to right itself. It wants to be buoyant. It wants to be happy, you know? But it's still going to reflect where the ocean takes us. And if the boat were to capsize with Jupiter and Moon, it's a major capsize. Even though it wants to be happy, it just amplifies the energies that come through it. And both, you know, the Moon itself is not a malefic or a benefic. You know, it's a neutral planet in that sense. It's one of those chameleons that takes the color of what hits it. So it wants to be a good little moon. It wants to run into that Jupiter, and it wants to make things good again. Right? And you'll note, markets will expand. Markets will expand because there's going to be such a vacuum going on there. So we start off with, on the surface of things, two interesting combinations that are fairly benign. Sun-Venus and Moon Jupiter, and we throw Pluto in the mix. All right, So this would say, okay, fashions this year are going to be interesting. A lot of pop culture comes to the fore. But there's still that underlying sense of transformation. Now, transformation can be an easy thing or a very hard thing. I think for a caterpillar, it's probably pretty easy because they're probably asleep most of the time during the chrysalis or in some other place. It's part of their natural cycle. But we have a transformation that comes along, like having a limb amputated or something of that nature, where all of a sudden now you have to adjust to a new level of life or a new way of looking at things. Here, transformations become harder to deal with, harder to accept. All right? And this little period here of happiness or so, remember, this chart lasts from 2 to 3 months before it's when it's due, like shortly after September, up through about 9 months afterwards to 12 months. But it fades over time. And the next one, the equinox chart, begins to come in February and fades itself as we start getting towards May. They take a shorter run, as Carol knows, when she does her weather stuff. The solstice chart is the larger chart, and then the other equinox crossings and other solstice, the summer solstice, are subsidiaries that lend information to the overall year and how those quarters are going to go. In your case, you actually look at each quarter individually. But that's pretty much the way it goes. So this chart is at its strongest point now. And it's just giving us an indication of where things go. It will fade, and parts of it will fade earlier than other parts, particularly the Pluto parts. And this brings us back to the Jupiter-Pluto conjunction near the cardinals 2 years ago. And that combination, happened at Christmas time. Everybody thought it'd be great. And all the effects of it were gone by February, where it should have been effective for most of the year, but the effects were pretty much gone by February. Similar thing occurs here as well, because the Pluto's going to move up to its station, and it will begin to make pictures with Hades on the other side of the cards. Now, those that went to the Boston talk a couple of weeks ago got to see that animation. We'll show that animation again. Of how the Pluto and the Hades stands on the cardinal axis within 7 minutes of arc for 9 months. For 9 months. This is just incredible. The minute that kicks in, that's the end of the Venus-Pluto, that's the end of the Sun-Venus, and probably the Moon-Jupiter. Because the focus will change. That's going to start in February. All right. Now, we have a bunch of eclipses coming in January, at the close of the month. They're very clear to see. Those eclipses will be the shutting down of the retail establishments that are limping along currently. All right. Linens and Things and all those other guys are controlled bankruptcies. Other bankruptcies will follow. Now, just a word about the crisis in itself before we come back to this chart is... we get the idea with the crisis itself that, all right, things have to retract. Are we going to keep the guys at GM employed? Are we going to have a proper social net for everybody and this and that? And that's the social implications of things, the activities of people. But there's a more practical thing that's dangerous here. When we had the Great Depression in the late 20s and 30s, 1929 forward, remember, the market didn't hit its bottom until 1931. And then they had those massive rallies in 32, but they were puffs of smoke because the economy really didn't get going until 1938, 39. But let's suppose you bought a vacuum cleaner in 1925, right? And then that company goes out of business in 1930. By 1940, you could still get that vacuum cleaner repaired and find used parts for it. Because manufacturing throughout most of the century, they would do it in runs and create a whole warehouse full of stuff and then go on and tool up for the next thing. If the company goes out of business, well, there's somebody out there who's going to liquidate that material and stick it in another warehouse somewhere trying to figure out how to sell it. And this makes a continuity in products and parts. We're in a just-in-time delivery method right now with no warehousing whatsoever, with critical components interlaced with each other. In other words, one company's making one little part that's crucial for a whole bunch of other companies. A good example of this is the iPhone. Qualcomm was the company that was making what were called 3G chips. And the 3G chips are enabling the phones to do all the stuff that the iPhone can do right now and the new Android phone from T-Mobile, right? That Android phone, by the way, is the thing to watch because it's a Google-based product and is an open source, which Apple is a very proprietary company, doesn't let anybody use their stuff. The Google thing being open sourced means that you're seeing the first convergence of the computer really coming to your phone, but it's not really going to be a computer, it's the access to the internet. The phone becomes a larger entity. Well, everybody wanted those 3G chips. They were all set to go about a year and a half ago, but a small company sued Qualcomm and tied them up in court for a year, and it held back all the stuff. Apple made a deal to get the earliest shipment of these things, and that's how come they were able to hit the market first with the iPhone. All those early iPhones basically are running with beta versions of the Qualcomm chips that were done through pretty much an illegal channel. You know? The second version of the iPhone is using the real chip. And these chips are just coming into general production now. So here's the situation of, you got 25 companies making cell phones, and they all couldn't do a thing until this one company, Qualcomm, could make the proper chip. All right? And then it gets all held up. So what's going on here is, as companies go out of business and as things change, first of all, there are no parts in production. And as some of these processes shut down, also you lose what's called institutional knowledge, the ability to actually build these things in the first place. So everything gets really weird and spotty. You know, the device you once had that was able to be serviced everywhere and everything else, all of a sudden, a critical supplier is gone, no parts in the warehouse, and everybody's trying to buy used, bidding everything up on eBay like a huge amount. You follow? That could lead us to another Stone Age pretty quick, just due to the fact of the way we distribute goods. I mean, when we had the oil prices going up, were being run up, and you know the real reason for the run-up is a thing called peak oil. Essentially, it wasn't that there wasn't enough oil. It was the projection of what they needed to pump over the next 5 years that got the speculators going, because we've already passed what's called peak oil. In other words, what they consider the most they're going to be able to pump out. So the supplies go diminishing from this point forward. The reason the oil prices are dropping now, of course, is because of the reduced economic activity. There's more. We're awash in oil. We're awash in oil. Not going to be the issue. I think I've been saying for the last 7 or 8 years, energy is not the problem. All those stupid fluorescent. You know, somebody really smart got the federal government to mandate the end of incandescent lights in favor of these fluorescent lights. And if you break it in your house, it's an EPA violation because they're full of mercury. These things are the worst disaster on the environment than you could ever imagine. And they're not saving any energy because they're so energy intensive to make. Some really shrewd guy paid off the right congressman, gave it the right PR, hey, this is the way to go. And now we're not going to be able to buy incandescent light bulbs anymore. And we're going to have all these stupid things that are so fragile and break all over the place and fill your house up with mercury. Well, it's because of the ballast going on there. I said, and it's bad for your eyes.
I was just going to say, our old eyes are very frustrating.
Oh, it's bad for the eyes because those things basically put out an ultraviolet wave, and most of the work in them is to mask out the ultraviolets. And it's basically UV blue you're looking at all day long, and UVA. Pardon?
Maybe the
Jupiter Pluto. They believe in that. This is from a while ago, yes.
What about LED?
That's the coming technology,
yeah.
And that is the way to go, and that's really what should be mandated. Now, they are using LEDs and traffic lights and stuff, and particularly the OLEDs, when they do come of age, they're going to be the next thing. In other words, two things about the future. One is, do I have it here? Yeah, well, what did I do with it? Here. I remember in 1987, I held up a pack of Camels, and I said, you're going to be talking into something this size, and it's going to talk back to you, and it's going to be beyond your, it's going to be more than your telephone. It's going to be your companion and your buddy, right? Well, a similar thing. The new form factor really is going to be more like this. A little narrower, a little bit taller, right? And you're really going to use it like this. The PS2 game is the form factor of the future for the universal device. I mean, they can make it as small, you know, as a quarter if they wanted to, but you can't hold a quarter easily. You lose it easily. Right? I mean, this is about as small as you get for a device that you can hang on to and still use it and get to the keys and use it feasibly, right? But the thing about this is that we're going beyond the telephone now. We're going to go to a direct intercommunication. You'll carry this device around, and you really won't need your home computer per se. All right? That'll become an anachronism. All right, home-type computing, you will be hooked up to a larger net function. Your astrology software, you'll rent. Now, you're already renting it now. I mean, if you have solar fire or something like that, hey, we come out with an upgrade every year and a half. You're paying $89 for that upgrade. You're renting the software. If it comes on a net-based situation and you pay $50 a year and you get a lot more features, there's no interface problems. There's no installing it on your machine. There's no putting in upgrades or anything. It happens automatically, invisibly. Your files, you never have to worry about the machine blowing up and losing your files or anything like that. They're stored on a secure server redundantly all over the place. You know, so it makes life very easy. You'll just carry these things around, and it'll be part of your life. You know, just like those guys that can really utilize the internet now, and they could go in a strange city and say, okay, where are the good restaurants, and where am I going to get my friends, and how do I get to the hotel, well, the services are in the hotel, you know, and it all makes life very, very simple and very easy in many respects. This is where that technology is going to go, right? But in the meantime, we do have the situation where in the, you know, like we have these, we're going to have these Qualcomm situations coming up continually where a shortage of a key part is going to drop dead several industries at once. Because one little company goes out of business, a crap load go out of business. Good example, Sichuan earthquake in China knocked out two-thirds of the fireworks manufacturing in the world, and we almost didn't have a 4th of July here in the U.S. They're still having troubles catching up. And the Italian firms came in to rescue the day, but they're wicked expensive. So, you know, they cancel fireworks shows all over the place. This is the kind of situation when a Katrina occurred, right? All the plants that make hydrogen and helium were all down on the Mississippi. They all shut down at once, and there was a shortage of helium, you know, for medical purposes and everything else. So, again, this idea of critical components, missing, spotty, and shortages goes right with Pluto and Hades. All right? Goes right with Pluto and Hades. This is a lack of materials or the lack of the proper material. So let's come back here. So this is an implication of all of this, right? Business cycles come and go. Panics usually don't last that long. This one hits its bottom around 2/11, right? Stays on the bottom through 2/12, and we only get to see it begin to turn upwards a little bit by 2/13. So 2/13, and that's a short financial disaster. You think about the Depression, the first schisms in the Depression was 1927, but 29 was, this is what's really going to happen, and it takes till 1940 to pull the country out. There was no social net, no backing, they made a lot of errors, most of Roosevelt's early policies were horrible, his later policies became better. You know, it was consolidating power, trying to pack the Supreme Court, trying this and trying that, right? But it takes a while. But we do have a net. This one's actually going to be shorter and more severe in that sense. So note that, you know, we're lucky in the sense that it's a shorter downturn, but a more disastrous one because of the other events that are going to compound it. Right? There was a lot of talk when Obama was running on the McCain camp about, oh my God, this guy's going to make us a communist and all this other jazz. A worker that used to work here, Cindy Sullivan, she always sends us great emails and stuff like that. She sends me a note and she says, the government's buying the bank. This is when they were first bailing out, you know, AIG and stuff like that. Does that mean that we're going to be a communist nation? And I had to send her definitions of what socialism is, what communism is, what Bolshevism is, and what Stalinism is, right? Because it's critical. First, understand something. The United States is the first socialist country, period. In our Constitution, it says that the Congress and the people will have the power to raise an army, create banks, create currency, regulate the supply, and secure the borders and collect customs. Right? First of all, it's the first time in history, period, that an army is raised by the people. Socialist army. The idea here is, what is socialism? Socialism is when the people own items that are too dangerous to put into private hands. Period. So things like armies, railroads, banks. When we built the railroads here in this country in the 1880s, right, they all lost money and went out of business. Literally. They built out the railroad just like the early dot-com thing where they all built sites all at once. They built out these railroads, put in thousands of miles of track, and they couldn't make money on it, went right out of business. And the government came in and for the first time said, these things are too big to fail. The infrastructure is necessary. And they forced them into mergers. In those days, the bankruptcy laws were an expediency. It was, instead of letting the thing go to crap, bring it to a court, and we'll try and put other companies together to absorb the assets and keep it going. Since then, all of that has changed. It's gone through a lot of very different directions. So socialism, really by definition, is a government that is elected, appointed, or by committee, doesn't matter. It's for the benefit of the people. People can do whatever they want. They can trade goods, they can sell goods, and all this other jazz. But certain organizations are only there for the good of the people, the government included. The government's a business just like GM. So even the government gets run by the people in a socialist situation. As well, in a socialist situation, you give it institutions that are deemed too important to trust to private hands. Now, in the U.S. Constitution, it says that the U.S. will charter banks. By 1913, we had completely given up that right and gave it to the Fed. All right? They freaked out because we were giving money to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and forgot about the idea that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were created as a government institution. And Lyndon Johnson sold it off to private investors to pay for the Vietnam War. It's our own institution. We're not giving money to private guys there. You have a stake in this organization. It's an extension of the government. You see? So socialism is something that really is welcome. The United States has always been a socialist nation. It's just what degree of socialism? We're a central to right-wing degree socialist nation, whereas Europe is central to left-wing socialist institutions. So in Europe, two-thirds of the goods flying through gets taxed. But it all goes into welfare stuff and larger government things like aerospatiale and putting together rockets and all these other kinds of things. In the U.S., it's more like, well, we'll let the private sector take care of it. But now there's three times in this century, 1907, 1929, and 2008, where trusting the banks and private institutions to regulate the money supply and the flow of goods in this country is just too big to trust to individuals. The banks were well regulated during this time. It was the hedge funds that evaded regulation that got us all into the trouble. You know, this whole business of subprime mortgages, they're trying to blame Barney Frank. The right wingers are trying to blame Barney Frank, right? And if you really look at the figures from the 1987, 1997 compromises, where they basically said that the banks have to give a certain amount of loans to minorities and poor people at a loss or at a break-even point, so that we didn't have such a disparity, right? That's what, and they say, oh, this is the whole trouble. It turns out that when you really look at it, all the institutions created at that time were selling out these subprime mortgages with up to right now, currently, a 1.2% failure rate, period. Right now, one out of three houses is going to fail. None of those mortgages are written out to poor people who can't afford to pay them. There was a great little vid out of California. It's running around on YouTube. It's one of the ones Cindy sent out, and it was about trash outs. And trash outs are where they have to go in after the house is foreclosed and clean it out so that they could sell the house. They have to take everything out and throw it away. And it was talking about a place in California, and the guy said, yeah, I used to do about one a day, you know, that sort of thing for the whole county, all of Orange County. He goes, now I got to do six a day. I got three crews out there, right? And he goes, and we can't sell the materials we're taking out of the house because we just no time. We just have to bring a dumpster there and we throw it all in. And you see guys going into multi-million dollar houses, taking big screen TVs, smashing them, throwing them in the dumpster, antique furniture, smashing and throwing in the dumpster. He says, and the guy was saying, and this is like really bizarre. He goes, you know, the poor people, they leave their house, they break the plumbing and they put shit on the doorknobs, but they take all their photographs, they take all their personal belongings, you know, whatever they can in that level, and they wait till the last minute until the sheriff evicts them. He goes, these other houses, these are multi-million dollar houses in these subdivision tracts. He goes, they were the point, the whole tract went out. And they said, the people are leaving months before the foreclosure, suddenly. And they take everything they can and throw in the car. They leave everything behind. But he says, but they're leaving behind their passports, their bank books. They're leaving their personal materials. He goes, it's as if aliens took them away. You know? And he said, my workers can keep the stuff, but they have to get it out of here today. In other words, you see one of the workers taking out a brand new vacuum cleaner, putting it on the sidewalk. If it can fit in his car, he can take it. But they just continue to show pictures of these guys breaking antique furniture and stuff like that and just throwing it in the dumpster.
Is this speculators?
No, this is trash out. This is.
No, I know that's trash out, but the people that just walk out so quickly, were they just speculators?
They were living in the houses and left all their personal belongings behind for the most part. That was the common thing. Where they went, God only knows. We know that during the 30s, the Okies went to California. Yeah, they lost the farm and went to California. These people, we don't know where they're migrating to or what's really going on. Now, you know, an example, on all of this stuff is that essentially these subprime mortgages and overwrought mortgages weren't sold to poor people that couldn't afford to pay them. They really haven't been. They have gone to middle-class speculators who got in way over their head. You know, and as you guys have also known in the last 7 years or so sitting here, I said, don't buy a house unless you're going to live in it. Don't be in debt. Those are the only two tenets. And a few folks have, you know, called me up and said, thank God I listened to you. You know, literally. Because, you know, we got out of debt. We're throwing coal. We got a coal stove now, you know, kind of thing. But, and we're driving old cars, but nobody's going to take anything away from us. We're not going to lose our house. And that was the way to do it, period. You know. So just a side note of the idea that we always have been a socialist country. Socialism and capitalism exist very, very well. It's just a question of who's going to regulate what. When you get to communism, in communism, the government owns everything, but you have a share in the government. In other words, you have part ownership in that government, and the government could be elected, appointed, or committee-oriented, right? And it's supposed to be for the good of the people and lead to a utopian society. Ha, 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 ha. We know it doesn't work. Right? Bolshevism is the next step where you have a share in everything, government owns everything, however, the government is the large entity. It's not there for the welfare of the people, and in Bolshevism, there is no utopia at the end of the rainbow, and in Stalin, and so there's no benefit at all, right, and or even implied benefit. And in Stalinism, you don't have a vote, and you don't own anything. one guy, a dictator, owns everything. Okay? So it's like, you know, pretty grim stuff. But we are a socialist country. We are the first socialist country in history, period. I mean, even the Romans, the armies were not raised by the government. They were raised by groups in the Senate, individuals. The various Roman legions, they had their allegiance to the general, not to the government. There was no central guy. Yeah, Julius Caesar had his 13th legion. And they walked into Rome and said, okay, guys, you know, get an army to get us out of here, and I'm taking over, you know. So, understand, we wrote the book on socialism, and then it gets formalized in the mid-80s of the 1800s, you know, 1850, after the Paris Commune, and Marx comes in and says, well, Marx doesn't even talk about socialism. The state has to run everything in Marx. You see, socialism is a natural consequence of capitalism. You know, you get these guys, they get too greedy, and the larger institutions come in and say, wait a minute now, if we're going to do this for the welfare of the people, we've got to take these rights away from you. You know, but just everybody can still have a grocery store and speculate and all that other jazz. So it's when it starts edging into communism and stuff like that, then we have an issue, because those are experiments that didn't grow organically and are untried. That's the problem with communism, Bolshevism, and all the other, and fascism. Fascism is the agreement between the government and industry as a socialistic situation. National socialism was fascism, where the government and the industries were partners, you know, and therefore the welfare of the people would come forward. Of course, Hitler used it all to build armies. That was his idea of good industry. You know, so that discredited fascism altogether. But there are good elements in its design. If you guys go back and watch the movie Grapes of Wrath, which is a good exercise in these times, right? Jode, the main guy, is hanging around in a hobo camp, and they're all eating mulligan stew, and they're having a deep political discussion. Right, all the bums are having a deep political discussion, right? And the one guy is saying, we need to have communism. Everybody's got to own everything. We can't have these rich guys owning all this stuff. You know, it's screwing us all up, right? And another guy says, no, it's going to be more socialistic, and we've got to, you know, have a strong central government, and but yet we all have to have a part. And they're going there arguing all this stuff as if they're bureaucrats. And one guy just gets up and says, hey, we just need a boss. Just give us someone to tell us what to do, and we'll do it. You know, we just need a boss. And really that was fascism. That was the guy and actually the movie basically is a proponent. If you really look at Grapes of Wrath, it's a proponent of fascism in that movie, because they wanted a strong boss. You know, Roosevelt was a strong boss. Hitler was a boss. Mussolini, the guy that wrote the book on that stuff, he was the boss. You know, El Duce, you know. And you know, so we get the idea there. That's what was going down. You know, we just need someone to tell us what to do. But of course, the entire lesson of the 20th century is, every time we listen to somebody and put somebody up there to tell us what to do, humanity falls off a cliff like lemmings. We follow that guy right into the grave. The bottom line is, one of the big things about this Pluto-Sun transition, and as I say, these transitions aren't necessarily easy to do, right? One of the big things about that is that we have to change over from this idea that there's somebody above us who's better than us, a demigod who's going to lead us out of things, like an Obama, you know? Unfortunately, the guy we trusted was Bush. Bush came in while Kronos crossed the Cardinals. Look at the position of Kronos right now. As Kronos at about 4 degrees of Cancer, it rules Cancer in the Uranian system. In 2001, as a matter of fact, September 6, 2001, 5 days before 9/11, Kronos hit the Cardinal axis for the first time.
I was trying to remember what it was last night when we were doing our talk.
Yeah, look, if I go back in time, let's go back a few years here and take a look. Right? Dot, 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 dot. Boing. There's 2000, right? And we go ahead one more year, and there's Kronos having gone retrograde. If I go back from December, say, 1, 2, 3, to September 21st, there's Kronos. If I even go back a few days, you see it. It's just at zero, right? And the meaning of this, here, let me get the position. Yeah, it's at 4 minutes of Cancer by that point, right? Let's go back home. The thing about this is that when I looked at this many, many years ago, actually in 1975, and at the time, I realized that, my God, a great leader will come at this point in time, you know? And I began to look at the combinations, and I saw, oh, it's coming in with the Hades conjunction, but the Kronos hits first. Everybody's going to love the leader. They're going to put all their energy into him, and then the Kronos, then the Hades comes, and they hate his guts, right? And he'll leave no heirs. Hades, Kronos, is it not a fecundity kind of a thing? It doesn't make kids, you know. So he leaves no heirs. And who? What would happen? Of course, we get two guys that represent two different poles, and they're both ineffectual. You know, we get Osama bin Laden, right? Who's ineffectual, and we get George Bush, who's literally ineffectual. And I said that the guy would be victorious in what he does. And in truth, Bush has been victorious in terms of the invasions and everything he did. The consequences of that victory is the whole thing. What is it in the I Ching, in hexagram 6 conflict, the top line is you prevail. You win the leather belt. But before the night is over, somebody will snatch it 3 times. In other words, yes, if you get victory, expect to lose it, basically. Don't go for an outright complete victory. You'll lose, even though you may win, you know? So Kronos hits the Cardinals, and I expected, you know, this guy in shining armor and stuff like that, and it turns out to be a jerk. So it was a real sad situation, but that was then, and that was that time ago, and, you know, you see these things coming for a long period of time. So the Kronos hits the Cardinals, and the real lesson of this, and the whole lesson of the 20th century, when you go back to the 18th century, people didn't follow leaders that way. They had to. There was the king or the potentate, and if you didn't follow him, hey, you go to jail or you get killed. Basically, that was it. But the 20th century is the 20th century of the mass man, the common man, having his say in things. And in the 20th century, we get the idea of leaders rising. We get the idea of broadcasting. You know, you think of a radio tower, and everybody listens to that radio tower. And one guy's at the microphone, you know. It gets exaggerated in the middle of the 20th century with the idea of the dictator. Not only is there one guy at the microphone, but he owns the station. You know, that kind of thing. And you'd think that after World War II that the people would understand this and begin to decentralize decision-making, drop it down to a lower level, less command and control and consolidations on a higher level. The first instances of this were the UN and the Asiatic group where we made, ASEA, what's the name of that group where we're friends with New Zealand and Australia and all that jazz, the East Asian thing, another group, the NATO
Alliance.
Yeah, then another alliance.
That's
North Atlantic. No, the NATO Alliance is NATO Alliance is another one where, again, you know, in other words, these are ways of solving problems. This didn't exist before World War I. None of this thing. The only way people solved problems between nations prior to World War I was if they were related to the king.
I was going to say, they all got married.
They all got intermarried. And it was a family affair because the world was run by potentates and kings. So the end of World War II, we really were supposed to decentralize everything, put less trust and direction into the idea of a ruler or somebody who has control over your individual life, and get down to a more basic level. Right? Broadcasting was a 20th century phenomenon. Prior to that, it was narrow casting, point to point. You wanted to go see somebody do music, you couldn't buy their record, you had to go see them live or somebody performing the music somewhere. Now we're back to point to point communications again, and the internet is the great leveler. We watch the newspapers now slowly sinking into the mud and the rise of bloggers. But now everybody's a blogger. So how the hell do you differentiate what's good, what isn't? Are there any controls or anything like that? This is the nascent or the beginnings of point-to-point communications, equal peer group stuff. And this is the way we're supposed to go. President Bush is supposed to be so onerous in the effects of his regime, which we won't see for a while yet. I mean, you see it now in terms of the finances. It's the rest of it you don't see for a while yet. So onerous that hopefully never again will we have such a strong, centralized, the leader of the free world. The Obama regime, as much as they really want to help everybody and everything else, they got no money. They've been given a bankrupt company that's deep in debt. The best that they're going to be able to do is be a benign bureaucracy. It's the best that they'll be able to do. A benign bureaucracy. In other words, they mean well. You know what I mean? There's no neocons there who don't mean well. But it's benign. And they won't be able to do very much. So don't expect a lot. Expect the sense, though, that, you know, power begins to devolve and begins to decentralize. It won't be until after 2015, 2016, 2017, after the next war, that we finally will begin to create institutions that will be mature enough to be decentralized in their orientation. So let's go drop back for a second. Capitalism, 17th century concept. Before the 17th century, you really didn't have large-scale businesses that went on beyond a generation. Literally. The guy was the shoemaker. He made his shoes. He sold his shoes.
His son
may have become a shoemaker and made the shoes and sold the shoes. But it wasn't like he organized all the shoemakers in the district and made a company that went on many, many generations after his death. It isn't until the 17th century that the big brewing houses and shipbuilders, the shipbuilders and brewing houses begin to make actual businesses that go on beyond the lifespan of the individuals making it. And then that's capitalism. And capitalism is this idea that this thing can grow. We get to the end of the 1890s, and all of a sudden, court decisions are saying that businesses are entities. And have the rights of people as if they were alive. This is the rise of the multinationals. This set this all up. These are all 20th century institutions. The idea of communism as a functioning force or socialism as a functioning force defined the way we do today, right? Because the founding fathers didn't think of it that way. It was libertarianism, you know? Rights, liberty, the ability to have basic things that were never mandated for humanity. You know, it was still the heroes from the time of the Greeks, guys coming and conquering cities and imposing their will. We lived with for 5,000 years. So the 20th century is this pivotal time that all these things, communism, socialism, labels of this nature, leaders and all, just fade away. Fade away. And now we still can't see what it is that's coming, but you can see it technologically. If you follow the technology, it's really leading the way. The internet breaks down all barriers. There is no discrimination. There's nobody there to look at it. You know, we as humans use it as a communication medium. And it's gone far beyond that. Who knows? Maybe it will get consciousness and become the horrible thing to have to deal with. What is Skynet, you know? But it does. It is an example of where it is that we have to go. We have to get away from the concepts of the 20th century. We have to get away from this idea of one leading many. We have to get away from this idea also of the multinational corporation and stuff. I mean, as Marx did say, the capitalists will eat each other up. But he didn't think about, that's why I said he makes no mention of socialism. He didn't think about the fact that the governments would intervene and nationalize things on a limited basis. He was an extremist. It was one or the other. It was one or the other. But it is true, left to their own devices, capitalism is not a viable course because it kills itself every single time through greed. So something is coming. A new paradigm. a new way of dealing with government, new way of dealing with ruling, and the new way of empowering people, and you're seeing the very, very beginnings of it. So, we have Sun Pluto with Venus, and we got Moon running with Jupiter at a time of pivotal change, and everybody's going to get poor. Yet they're nice combinations. They're nice combinations. When my old girlfriend, many years ago, when her brother French fried in a fire, literally, I mean, inhaled gasoline fumes and, you know, the flames in his lungs and stuff, it was a horrible thing. It was a beautiful day. The sun was conjunct Jupiter. The moon was running to Venus. And I was at the butcher getting some stew meat, and I looked on top of the hill, and I look and I see a plume of smoke down in the swamps. This is in New Jersey, overlooking the Meadowlands. And I was saying to the butcher, oh my God, look what's going on there. Look at all the fire trucks going to it. Beautiful combinations. I came home to find the note on my answering machine saying, quick, we're all going to the hospital. Anthony's injured. You know? Beautiful combinations can make for very horrible events. They presage a big change. The change is still positive. The ultimate effects of what's going on are a bad way to end our generation, you know, to go out in a demise. But what comes from it will be very, very good in the end. But you got to be 20 years old to appreciate it. If you're 60 years old, we're looking at the twilight of things. Hey, we might be around for another 20 or 30 years if we're lucky, you know, or if we want to. But still, it's the youth right now that has to deal with it. And quickly over the generations, them kids born before 1963 actually, we're all witnesses. We're not participants. We can only witness the events. And that's what we came back for, by the way. You know, we came back at the height of the old culture to watch the transition into the new. You know? The kids born in 1965, 66, and forward up to around 1973 to 75, these have that Pluto-Uranus conjunction in Virgo. They're the civic-minded ones. These are the guys that built the internet and are going to have to be on the front lines to clean up the mess. They're of age now. They're in their 40s. They're coming into their own power, and they will be, as I said, benign bureaucrats, Pluto, Uranus, and Virgo, cleaning up the civic mess, so to speak, and bringing in the revolution along with them. As I said, the internet is the form factor that social movements will follow. The kids born in the 90s, right, 1987 or so through 1995, some of those indigo kids, so to speak, right, the kids born in this era, they're the new world. They are the new world. That's why I say the 20-year-olds right now, they got a bad start. It's a horrible time to come out of school and stuff like that and face the worst job market in 40 years, you know. But at the same time, they'll have their pain early. They'll have their pleasure later. Us, we'll have our pleasure all the way till the end, even if we have to lose things along the way, you know, it's still better than when we started. You know, remember, you think about what it was like in the 50s. It was wonderful in many respects, but as she said, it was a very conformed period of time. You could have any telephone you wanted as long as it was black. You know, all the cars had fins and never lasted more than 80,000 miles. You know, but well, the whole idea, though, is that, you know, this was a period of time in general, the 50s and 60s and like that, before a major change. It was the end of another era. You know, it was the end of another era. And well, the colored people had a hard time, but think about if you had been born in France. In 1955, you would go out in Paris, you'd go out to the countryside, and there'd still be ruins from World War II. There was still martial money still coming in. It was, you know what I mean? It was this...
I remember 53, there'd still be
being coupons, you know, ration coupons.
I know. I remember them taking the tanks. They brought tanks to my town. They took the cannons off of them. They brought tanks to tear down the army barracks that they had put in for the families of the guys that went overseas. They put up these army barracks on just the swampland in my town. And tanks. I remember as a little kid watching these yellow tanks smashing these buildings down. And that's the thing. So it was the end of an era. So the era that we go into, right, by the time those 20-year-olds, by the time those 1992 babies are 25 years old, they begin to see the new world. By the time they're 35, they're actually building it, and they're actually in it. And the groundwork will be laid by the Uranus-Pluto conjunctions, by the 1965 babies. So, you know, stay where we are in all the things, you know. We're not going to grasp that world too well. I mean, how many of you guys here sit around listening to hip-hop music, and even though it's passé, you know what I mean? It's like, well, our parents freaked out over rock and roll, but you know, rock and roll was melodic.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah, rock and roll was melodic. You know? We get to this period of time, and it's like, it's not even melodic, and not only that, it's recycled. You know, a lot of the new music now is samples of old music just tied together, you know? So, you know, we're just not capable of understanding it. Yeah, there'll be a few Uranus guys that like that stuff that are in our age bracket, but for the most part, it's from a different world. You know? So we're like what we grew up to be our parents, but an even more extreme case. But an even more extreme case. Now, let's look at some more, begin to look at the current events. So, just to go over it very rapidly one more time, we start in 2001 with Kronos crossing the cardinals, the last great leaders in the world. We end this decade, or come to the end of the decade, with the Sun Pluto with the Pluto crossing into Capricorn. Not a big event. It's just another sign change. Damn, things aren't going to be in there 12, 13 years, right? But yeah, 15, right? But it is the bottom of the Earth chart. It's the bottom of all cycles. Zero Capricorn for the Northern Hemisphere is the bottom of all cycles. For the Southern Hemisphere, it's the top of all cycles. But either one, either the top of the wave or the bottom of the wave, presages a major change and amplifies the change. So here we see the symbiosis of the fact that the old world has to go away. It has to transform or die. Right, and preferably Pluto would rather it just be dead and we start something new altogether. You know, that's Pluto's preference always. Pluto has a hard time trying to keep the same form factor and putting new people in there. Just says, "Oh, just kill them all. Just destroy everything. We'll just start all over again." You know, and there's nobody older than Pluto to say no. So now let's start looking at things. All right, first off. Yes, right.
Maybe it would be a time to take a break.
You think?
Yeah, a short one.
Oh, we're at 12:30. You're right. Yeah. We're at that point in time. Okay, when we come back, let's take a break. Let's go out and eat some food. We're going to come back in about 1:15 or 1 o'clock, depending upon if everybody gets bored by 1 o'clock. We'll come back that early, but they're still wrapping by 1:15. We'll start with deciphering some of these combinations on the East Coast. We'll look at some of the other locations in the world and look at some ASCAR. Astrocartography.
Oh, okay.
All right, and I'm gonna.
The alphabet soup is getting.
And one thing, hey Ray, the pause. I don't trust the pause switch on this, so I'm just gonna shut it and start it up again.
No, go ahead and hit pause.
You think it's gonna hold a pause for 45 minutes?
Yeah.
All right, so now we're starting up part two for the afternoon. I hope everybody's nicely filled up at the moment. Eat all that food up. We're looking at this 360-degree dial. The two things I was leaving you with was the idea we're going to look a little bit further on this wheel for the U.S., and then we're going to take a look at the solar map for the world with this chart, because it is very interesting. And I've picked out a few capitals to take a look at. All right? Just a few notes and comments. First of all, the big deal going on here, besides that Sun-Pluto and the Saturn-Uranus oppositions that we spoke about, right, is the fact that Mars is running on the ascendant for the East Coast and running with the Sun and Pluto. Now, just a note, on Wednesday, this last Wednesday, when the gunman went into Mumbai and began shooting up, that Pluto was right near the Cardinals, a lot closer, a few more minutes, but transiting Mars was at 7.5 degrees of Sagittarius. And it was this really classic picture with the Jupiter-Saturn and the Mars and Pluto all ganged together, which says buildings with this, you know, Mars-Pluto thing, you know, death and destruction going on. But this idea of murder and murder sanctioned by the government is very clear in this horoscope. If we look at this Mars itself, right, that Mars is opposing that Hades, all right, and runs with the ascendant. And you'll note that it also stands in a wide square to Saturn. You see, you can use this thing as an aspectarian, by the way. It's very easy to use it as an aspectarian. This would be a semi-sextile, a sextile, a square, a trine, a inconjunct, opposition, etc. It's very simple to use. So we look at that Mars and we see the half square, because that's what these dots are. These are the sesquiquadrate and the half square itself. So we see that Mars is half square the node, wide square to Saturn, but Saturn is, that line here tells us it's the midpoint. See that the distance from here to the pointer is the same as from here to the pointer. So that we see Saturn and the cardinals. And the cardinals in our orientation has to do with the world at large. So delays and separations in the world in general, or difficulties through affecting the U.S. and its use of the military, forced to use the military for very underhanded kinds of things. But it also shows the poverty in the U.S. government. All right. One of the things that's going to occur here, this Pluto, this Hades means want, depravity. Its highest level is service. It really is. So it's the most spiritual planet of the whole of these funny planets that we use in the Uranian system, all right? Because it rules that high concept of selfless service in general. It's like, think of Hades as the little microbes in your gut doing a job that nobody else wants to do. But without them, you can't live. You see? That's Hades. But in its other forms, it talks about want, depravity, loss, ugly things, murder, old stuff, worn out stuff, shortages. And you'll notice that the Hades itself, right, besides running near the cardinals, stands with the ascendant and sun Pluto for the U.S. and very close to that Mars. Right. It also stands with the Poseidon and Venus, which Poseidon and Venus is a congregation of the faithful, or a strong religious orientation. So we've got some ancient religious things coming in with guns, literally. And they're sanctioned by the government, because if we go back to the cardinals and we put this pointer a square to the cardinals, Mars reflects Kronos to the second of arc. And Mars Kronos is the man in the uniform. With Hades, the secret police. With Hades, a thug squad. You know, like Hitler's brown shirts used to beat up people, or the Gestapo later on just threw them in the gas chamber kind of thing. So we have a situation here with government-sanctioned hitmen, literally. It's going to affect the U.S. It doesn't mean that they originate here. It doesn't mean they originate here. But the scenario that's setting up here is, God help us if these guys are traced back to the Pakistanis. Because the situation, you know, there's a lot of news you don't get, literally. But if you understand the situation between India and Pakistan, you'll come to realize that it makes the Palestinian-Israeli problem a kind of an inside joke, literally.
It's been
the Palestinian-Israeli situation is a fight between cousins. They both worship the God of Abraham. Now, you know that interfamily fights can be much worse than fights with an external enemy, you know? kind of thing. When they're fighting over that probate or something like that, they'll never talk to each other again. Right? That kind of, So that's the Israeli-Palestinian thing, but they're all people of the book. But the Muslims and the Hindus are so disparate. that the Muslims think nothing of taking Hindu babies and smashing their heads against the rocks all day long without any remorse whatsoever because they do not consider them human. All right? And the Hindus themselves, very open, wide-ranging group, right, are scared to death of the Muslims, literally. So, here's the situation over there. Both countries are armed to the teeth with nuclear weapons. They do not have a mutually assured destruction pact like the U.S. and Russia did. They have no moral precincts like the U.S. and Russia did during Cold War. They don't care. Seriously. The only reason they aren't throwing nuclear bombs at each other currently is because the Pakistani government has been relatively stable and ruled by a benign military. Really. Musharraf, when he was in, he kept the balance to a certain extent, but upset the military itself, because most of the military was supporting the Taliban because it allowed them to control Afghanistan. And when we came in and invaded, Musharraf, instead of going with his own intelligence officers and military and telling the U.S. to go to hell, right, took the money and became an ally. Now, it's been split ever since. You have half the intelligence forces in Pakistan supporting the Taliban still, and half of them on the Musharraf side. Bhutto comes in, and she would have been a somewhat okay reformer, but her husband, Mr. 10%, that's what they call him, is completely ineffectual. Completely ineffectual guy. If it's perceived by the Hindus that there is a destabilization in Pakistan, they will immediately drop nukes on Islamabad without blinking an eye. Because their big fear is that a wild-eyed Muslim group will take over or get control in the military and drop bombs on New Delhi. All right? So India is predisposed to strike first, literally. And that's why this is so critical. And this is all over Kashmir. And they have been fighting over Kashmir as long as the Palestinians and the Jews have been fighting over Israel. 1947, since the partition with Israel, 1948. So we have two conflicts with very similar roots which have worldwide implications on top of one another. And particularly, I've always said that, you know, the Israelis live in the neighborhood. You know, they're there already. It's more the government, really, that is objectionable to all the other groups around there than the Israeli people themselves. This is really important because Palestine always was integrated. It was always a bunch of Arabs, a bunch of Jews, and stuff like that. It was the 1948 Zionist government that really, you know, it stole all their lands, stole all the Arab lands, threw them out of the country and said, you can't come back. If you don't join us right now, you're out of here, you can't come back. And that's what that fight is really all about. Those displaced Palestinians, they want to get their land back. They lived there. So they don't like the government. The Jewish people themselves, they were living with for a couple of thousand years, or at least three centuries, when they began to resettle into the area. But the Muslim Hindu thing is all over the state of Kashmir, which just by a fluke went to India. It's mostly Muslim. But there, what was it? What's the name of the guys that the caliph, not a caliph, whatever was the local leader that was in charge there, the Punjab or whatever he is, you know, he just made a choice when the British were partitioning and just like kind of did a coin toss, literally. And said, oh, I'm going with the Indians. And the people freaked out because they wanted to go with Pakistan, you see. So, because the Hindus are a minority in Kashmir.
Aside, well, not a big one, is I remember as a kid the whole thing with Pakistan being two pieces on either side of India and
Bangladesh. Right.
Is there still any of that issue going on?
No. Pakistan was happy to get rid of Bangladesh because this way they don't have to deal with poverty. You know, they had no control over there. It was a fight. There was a war, but you don't hear anything about them lamenting the loss of Bangladesh. Right. So this is bad news in general, because this is a setup. That's why I've mentioned right off the bat that the U.S. is going to have to continue to engage militarily. Also, when we take a look at Brussels to represent the EU, that also shows strong military interaction. We might actually get NATO off its butt to do something, you know, or they may be forced to themselves due to, you know, attacks or whatever in their area. All right, so this is important to note. Now, the next thing to note as well is the Sun Pluto standing on the cardinal axis itself. Hans Niggemann, my old teacher, unlike the books, if I go and I take drag Pluto here to the Sun, right, we're going to get a little interpretation up, right, and it's going to say general nourishment and mode of living. General nourishment and mode of living. Of course, if we do it like this, let's move this up here. Right, if we do it like this, if we go Sun plus Pluto minus Aries, general nourishment and mode of living. Well, the whole idea, though, of Sun and Pluto itself is it rules food. It rules food. So we also have a changeover in our food supply. Now, note something. We had that cyclone in the Irrawaddy Delta region of Burma in May. Right now, as we speak, is when that rice crop that got wiped out would be due. That rice crop feeds 60 million people of Southeast Asia. The day that the cyclone hit, India and China stopped exporting rice. Right on the day. The day after, it was like, that's it, we're shutting it down. Because they know the Irrawaddy Delta is the equivalent of our Midwest for growing grain, you see. Now, it hasn't exported for a long time. It used to export everywhere. It fed China and fed India. But they've missed the military government in Burma is so bad, they've mismanaged everything, that it basically was reduced to feeding its own people, Laos and Vietnam, right, and Bangladesh. They're screwed. They're absolutely screwed, because they're the poorest people on the planet, and now they have no source of food. Same thing with Africa. You have a few little countries in Africa where the food distribution is correct, right, outside of the industrialized, like South Africa and stuff. The rest of it, maggots in a pail. Literally. It's going to be the worst humanitarian disaster during the course of this year and next will be also occurring in Africa. Yeah. As well, you get the Northern Movement, and then you have the Southern Revolts, and both have the effect of using food as a weapon and disrupting the food supply itself. So, the situation is basically this. Let's suppose that Carolyn is correct in the sense that we have a big dry spell coming into the springtime, going into the summer, and crops have a tough start. Let's suppose that in my own terms, right, I had felt that we'd be going into some volcanic reaction in the Pacific Rim during this period coming into the spring, and that would cut photosynthesis down by 10 or 15%, you know, which could also have a similar effect. And either way, the U.S. grain yields, say, are 80% of the current yields, or 70% of the current yields, right? We'll eat. You're in a first world country. Even though our funds are taken away, your 401ks are worthless, and all that other jazz, there's still a lot of money sloshing around in this country. And if there isn't a lot of money sloshing around, there's a lot of material, a great infrastructure, the best in the world in many respects, to do things. And plus, the most important thing is, the whole North American continent is 5% of the world's population, and we grow 40% of the world's grains. We will eat. Not only that, they're beginning to realize that Russia abandoned its collective farms when the Soviet Union collapsed, and they weren't doing that great before then. But they never used modern farming methods and put any kind of chemicals or anything else in their soil. The steppes of Russia, Siberia, Ukrainian farms, those old collective farms are becoming, they're starting to get reactivated, and they're bringing in good equipment because Russia's got money now, and they've got good foreign connections to do this sort of thing, and they're realizing that Russia itself could supply the world with 70% of its food right now if they planted the crops. Right now. And you look at the soil, it was showing a thing on the TV, they were showing the soil, it's like black as coal. Black, rich soil. Right now, the collective I was watching about was a corporation, it was an American corporation. They brought Caterpillar tractors over and they were doing sunflowers. They were harvesting sunflowers. And they were getting huge yields out of these sunflowers, like 500 times what was happening under the Soviets. So this is an untapped resource that will be coming in over this period. This is like the Sun-Venus. See, Sun-Pluto with the Venus. See the good parts of things.
I don't think sunflowers aren't important.
What does the chart say about the agribusiness is depleting the soil, wrecking the environment?
Well, so I'm trying to let you know that Russia has the ability to displace this.
But can they maintain it to be organic and natural?
Right now it is.
Right.
Right now it is. All right, but you have to remember, most of the revolution in food, the Green Revolution, had to do with genetics and seed stock, not the methods. Not some of the methods, but not the chemical methods that are intensively used here, because most of the countries in the world can't afford the chemicals we spend. We subsidize our farmers and our farm to buy those chemicals. In other words, it's an inside deal. The rest of the world doesn't follow it that way. You go to Europe, there are no chemicals in the fields there. It's only an American phenomenon, period. Not even Canada.
Right, but the U.S. is trying to bring these destructive...
Not going to work because they're all going out of business now. We're a lesser player in the world, and we're going to become even lesser more. And what I'm trying to let you guys know is that even if our contribution to the world food stocks drops by 20 or 30 to 40%, we'll still get something out of it and we'll still eat. And you have to remember, the most damaging thing going on is the fact that we're planting so much corn and diverting that corn.
Right.
We're monocultured. And the monoculture is worse than the genetic seed stock that's going in there or the chemicals that have gone into the ground. The worst of the chemicals went in the ground in the late 40s through the late 50s. Since then, it's been 1/20 of the materials going in the ground, except in the tobacco industry. In the tobacco industry, they can still use DDT.
What?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
They can still use DDT in the tobacco industries. Because it's not an agricultural product that you eat.
No, you just
inhale it.
Right, right. They can put up 12 times the amount of chemicals on and grow the stuff from pure chemicals, and they are. That's why, you know, before World War II, there was no lung cancer, and people smoked like fish. There was no case. As a matter of fact, they still have the first lung cancer case from the 20s, which was a black lung that mutated from a miner because it was so bizarre. Nobody ever got lung cancer. They got consumption. They got TB, tuberculosis, which was a bacterial infection. All right. After World War II, they began to use DDT and do these intensive chemical farming methods with tobacco, and people began to get cancer. Now, doesn't mean that smoking is good for you with good chemicals or pure tobacco. And that stuff with those Indian cigarettes is crapola too. That's the grade B tobacco. You know, it's naturally grown, but it's grade B tobacco. You know, there is, you know, it's like buying Gallo wine and thinking it's great.
But you know what, Gary? Yeah. Hopefully there will be a shift to sustainable
farming methods. Oh, absolutely, but it's not going to be...
More profitable.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen until after 2012. Because right now, what's got to occur is, in this transformation, those indiscriminate subsidies and all that allow these things to go, the marriage of the corporates with the farmers will break down.
Right.
It will break down. It's like...
The promise of this new government.
Well, not... Don't look to this government to try and fix anything. They really won't be able to. It will be the market forces themselves that will dictate that we can't give these subsidies any longer. Not the orientation of the government.
How can you give a subsidy if you can't even help somebody that's burned out and flooded out?
Well, much like we did the subprime mortgages and got all these people into houses and stuff that really shouldn't have been there that way, kind of a thing. So the banking industry burned up their own bridges. It's the same situation in the agriculture business with the ethanol stuff. In other words, it's like, this is, you know, they're supposed to be growing this stuff for food, and they're growing it for fuels, and then there's a flood of fuels, and all these ag businesses own their own distilleries for the ethanol, unlike other industries. It's actually a homegrown thing, but they're all going to go out of business. So they're going to die. Those farmers, those large-scale farmers, are going to croak because of their own investments in ethanol. You follow? It's like the bizarre thing brings them down, not regulation or deregulating or mandating a change or coming back with an environmental thing saying, oh my God, it's going to destroy everything. The world will balance itself. Now, about ecology in general and recovery from ecology, Cape Cod is a great example of nature healing itself. Cape Cod, if you went to Cape Cod in the 30s, this place was an ecological absolute disaster. When the pilgrims landed here, there was 2 feet of topsoil. Where hemlock trees, third generation, was a climax forest. All the life was in the canopy. This place was, the Indians every once in a while would burn up a field so they can grow some corn. They had to grow their corn out in Truro in the sand because they can get sun because the canopy was so dense here. Right? Of course, we came and within 300 years, we chopped all the trees down. All the topsoil washed into Cape Cod Bay and into the Sound. It became a completely sandy environment. The old guys hate the fact that the trees came back because they used to be able to stand on a hill and see P-Town. And that's the way they grew up. It's like, what do we need the trees for? And how come we get, what are you making soil? What, you should have left it sand. We don't have to worry about anything. We don't have to worry about floods or anything. It just goes right. You know, the old folks, they want those crappy ways. But you look out at Cape Cod now, and it's an environmental jewel. It's an environmental jewel. So all that stuff is cycled through. And nature can heal itself. Even the MMR, where you have tetrachlorohydrazines and missile fuels and all that jazz in the groundwater, is getting cleaned. And eventually the system flushes itself. So that is the one thing on an ecological basis. The world doesn't care as an entity. Because we're nothing but a blip. And every chemical created by humans or otherwise exists in the world anyway. Arsenic kills. It's in the soil. You know, other poisons, botulisms and everything else are all over the place and pervasive. The reason that we adopted a lot of the things that have been adopted today has just gone wild and wacky is, hey, before the turn of the century, what was the largest killer of people?
Infections.
No. Food poisoning. You are more likely to die from a bad piece of food than anything else. Even down to President Harrison, guy eats a bowl of cherries and cream, goes up and gives a speech and drops dead 2 days later from stomach ailments, you know, from the food poisoning. So the idea of developing refrigerators and modern harvest methods, there are good things in this. Now, you know, and basically, you know, organic farming is great if you wash the salmonella off.
That's very interesting you should say that because I love watching those where they take people and throw them back into another time frame.
Yeah.
In England, they did an Iron Age, and they nearly killed themselves with food poisoning. None of the people today had skills of realizing what they were doing.
Well, guess what? In the old day, in 1880 in England, if you went to London and bought a quart of milk, you basically got a quart of rotted green milk that they put chalk in to make it white. And if your stomach tolerated, you either tolerated it or you didn't. So it was that bad. I mean, pre-refrigeration, pre-vacuum cleaners. You think about the world before a vacuum cleaner. I mean, this blows my mind away. You think about the world before a vacuum cleaner. I mean, you know, dust, the dust bin, taking the rugs out and beating them, living in an environment laden with dust. And today, you know, we have children that are so sensitive to this stuff. You know, so even...
The water wars.
This is another thing. Water itself is going to become more and more of a precious commodity. And yes, we'll be properly priced more than oil. You know? So that's another issue. So this idea of food, affecting things over the next 3 years. Large-scale famines. The distribution of food. There's enough food in the world. There's the Malthusian view that, oh, there are too many people pressing too many resources on the world. Wrong. The world could sustain 25, 50 billion people without breaking a sweat. We only aggregate less than 5% of the world's surface for food. Period. So it's a matter of distribution and profit determines the availability of food. And of course, as I mentioned, you live in a first world country, you're going to have more guilt of consciousness over the poor people dropping dead in other countries than having to worry about scrounging for food for your own plate. Right? Very, very important. The issue of water, very, very important. All right. This is going to also come back to haunt the U.S. Now, understand the effect of this on the U.S. The U.S. is no longer a rising power. We don't have the unlimited resources we previously had. We're a secondary power. We're basically the rent-a-cops of the world. Seriously. You know, we're the only... I mean, listen, we spend our whole military... Nobody comes up to even 5% of what we spend on our military. So, we're the cops of the world. You could tell that we're falling apart just because the pirates of Mogadishu can have run of the oceans. Our whole job was to patrol those straits and to patrol the straits down in Indonesia where the other pirates are. You don't talk about the pirates down there. But the same thing going on there. You got another area was been piracy going on since the Vietnam era, right? But we send those ships out, we patrol those waters through the main waterways. We don't have great deals with Egypt. We don't like Yemen. You know, they don't like us. So we don't bring too many ships over there except to bring the troops in and out. The world crying out and the brazenness of the piracy situation is bringing the ships closer. But it's becoming a multinational effort. It's becoming a multinational effort. But this is what the U.S.'s job is, essentially, in the world. I mean, it's what we're getting reduced to in that sense. So we will come out of this in 4 and 5 years as a much reduced power, kind of like Argentina. No, there's a couple of things that are going to occur in February, right? Now, as we go into the February period, here, let's take a look. Let's go off to 90-degree dial land here. Now, this is, the 90-degree dial is 1/4 of the 360, and it lays the cardinal signs on top of the other cardinal signs, the fixed on the fixed and the mutable on the mutable. So when we go to the 90-degree dial, that first 30 degrees are all the cardinals. So Pluto is at almost 1 degree of Capricorn, and Cronos is at 4.5 of Cancer. If they're conjoined on this wheel, they're either opposition, conjunct, or square. All right? If they make an opposition on this wheel, like Venus, there's your half square. You see the Venus-Sun? Right? They're opposed. We see that same thing on the 360. We see it as a half square. So the 90-degree dial sums up hard aspect, where the 360 shows a soft aspect as well. Right? And we look at this dial here, right, with that Mars Cronos standing on that cardinal axis, kind of a thing, and we start looking at other materials. The water, the food, all this material, like if we go Sun, Pluto, right, we catch that Venus all together. This is, like I say, there is promise of food. You know, there are resources that are untapped, right? But what's going to happen to the U.S. is what's going to happen to the rest of the world. Hades and Cronos stand with that Pluto. And Hades and Cronos is atrocities, great mortality, sacrifices of human lives, great crimes of or against the government, failed conspiracies. We see this just happening in Mumbai. We see it happening in other places right now. Failed conspiracies, right?
That whole Africa
thing. But it also means a poor government, a government without resources. Over time, that Hades is going to cross the cardinals. And that's when the real want begins in the world, and that's in late 210, right? And comes to conjunct the chronos at about 6 degrees of the cardinals. Well, not conjunctive. Well, yeah, it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be the conjunction, right? Yeah, it's going to be conjunction over there. And that will be, governments will be very atrocious at that time. What we have to be very cognizant of is regimes rising at this point in time, militaristic regimes that are very oppressive. That's what will be happening in the background. So bear that in mind, that the governments won't have, the U.S. government in particular, will not have the wherewithal to do anything. And that's what leads up to the next era. That's what leads up to things that are coming. Now let's jump off of this for 1 second, and let's go to Solar Fire and grab, here we are, and grab our, what do you call it? Hey, get Outro. Going here. Archetography. Thank you. I hope I don't get too Alzheimer'd out. Any rate, let's grab a chart here. What we want to do is, do I have to put the chart in? No. I just have to go to the ask. Actually, I should put up solar maps. I think I've already got it in solar maps. No. Let's just get rid of that and go right over to solar maps. There we go. Okay, we'll grow up the solar mappies. And let's go and grab the charts. Let's open select a chart. And we're going to select our cool chart here. Wink. Whoops. Okay. There we go. All right, here we go. Now let's take a look at, first of all, on a world basis, here's the east coast of the U.S., right? And there is our Hades, our Pluto, our Kronos, and the Sun. Right through Miami, right through Nicaragua, right? Through the edge of Cuba where they've been hit by 40 hurricanes, right? Right up to Washington, and you know it spills off. You see it starts spilling off. It goes shooting up into Canada and spilling off, right? And this is Zeus on the meridian here coming down through the whole thing. Whoops, cut that out. Right. So now watch these lines. On the other side,
India.
Right through. There's Bombay, and there's our Hades, and our Pluto, and everything else. So there is a direct connect here. Alright? There's a direct connect. There's our Sun, there's our Pluto, there's our Uranus, and our Pluto and all that jazz, our Mars and all that jazz. Coming up through Nigeria area, up through Algeria, and right up through London.
Midheaven London.
Yeah, Midheaven in London. And of course, right now they're trying to connect those terrorists, not to Al-Qaeda, but to a cell in London. It's pretty much the London guys have already said, ooh, they might be coming from us. Now note that the Saturn and Uranus starts making perons on all of this stuff also in England. England's a spot that's not going to do too great. Notice Admetos, which means death and standstill, right through Mogadishu, with Venus. Right on Mogadishu, Venus going right through Saudi Arabia, Venus going right between Tehran and Baghdad, right, and up through Russia. You think, oh, well, Venus is a good thing, but you know, Venus is the ruling planet for Islam.
And it's war.
Whenever Venus shows up in one of these Middle Eastern countries, that means they're fighting. Literally, it's the opposite Venus than the way we conceive of it. So we get Venus and Admetos. Radical death. Neptune also through this whole same area, right? We follow that Admetos through, boink, right, and it changes over, goes out through the west part of the U.S. See it down by Los Angeles and Tijuana in particular. And you know what's going? Do everybody watch Weeds on Showtime? Oh, it's a great little show. It's really funny. But really what's going on right now is that the last part of the season was the mayor of Tijuana was also all involved in the drug cartels, and they dug a tunnel from Tijuana to the U.S., and they were, you know, and the woman was just like, well, you can bring pot through, because that's all she wanted was pot, right? And then she's noticing they're bringing girls through, guns through, money through, and then stuff going back the other way, and they've got this conduit. This is really going on. This is really going on. There's no government on that border between the U.S. and Mexico. You have a bunch of industries in the various zones, and they're protected. But the rest of it is wide open for exploitation by the drug cartels, and they are doing that. They are literally doing that. So that Admitos, right here, Admitos, yes, Admitos, right? And then the Admitos comes back again, shoots off into the sea, and comes back to Mogadishu again. Now, watch that Admitos as it goes up. It comes up, and it's going to hit near Warsaw and Stockholm as well. So interesting things are going to happen to those places, you know, as well in the whole thing. Then you look at a place like Brazil, right? Rio gets nice Neptune, right? They may have pollution issues or whatever, but hey, they've captured the world's imagination, you know. They have, and they have Venus running through the whole thing with the Argentinian and the node. Now, to get back to the whole question of why the U.S. is going to be like Argentina, is we come to this February period. And in the February period starts this rotten combination I'm going to show you. But in that thing, there's a lot of rumors about something called the Amiro. I don't buy these rumors, right? And the idea is that they were waiting for a fiscal crisis and a parity between the U.S. dollar and the Canadian dollar of 60 cents to the U.S. dollar, and a parity between the peso and the U.S. dollar of 10 to 1. And at that point, once those two thresholds are reached, they would use the crisis to take out the U.S. dollar as a worldwide currency and substitute it with a North American free trade agreement currency called the Amiro. And the dollar becomes worth 2 cents to the Amiro, and we get to refudiate all of our debts. And that, of course, causes a worldwide chaos in and of itself and makes everybody poor. That's exactly what happened to Argentina. Argentina, and the only thing they didn't do was change the currency. What they did with their currency is they tagged it to the dollar. So whatever the dollar was worth is what they considered their currency to worth. And they said to the rest of the world, which they owed, they were leveraged up to the hilt. They said to the rest of the world, go to hell. We don't want the IMF. We're not going to pay back the debts. And they got very poor for a while. They're still very poor. But It's like the people I talked about that took my advice for the last few years. They're out of debt. They own their home. They got used cars and they're struggling to make other payments, but they're not going to get foreclosed. You see? The same thing with Argentina. They're out of debt. Nobody wants to loan them any money, but they're making it. They are doing the things itself. Now, note, next item, the Saturn and Uranus. Notice that the Saturn and Uranus comes right down through the middle of the Pacific Basin. This is where the big trench is in the basin. Goes right through Argentina. Bam! Comes around, New Zealand, I'm sorry. I'm thinking Argentina. Right through Wellington, right? And that comes with the Sun, the Mars, and the Pluto, and everything else is all ganged around here. We're getting to something. Hey, you're getting to something. We're coming to something here. Now, that whole bit drops up again, right, comes up again, becomes part of that London thing, and it's off the planet. This is the only place it really manifests outside of London.
Pluto and New Zealand. London and
New Zealand, correct.
Well, how about up north of there, what is that, Siberia?
That's Kamchatka, and I'll tell you, there's a few villages there. Like a bunch of military spots. Yeah,
that's
you know.
That's even higher than the 1911? The one where they...
Well, we're going to... Krakatoa was 1883. And the Krakatoa is over here.
No, I'm talking about the one that was in Siberia. It was 1908.
Oh, the 1910, Nakuska, where... No, that was actually over here.
That's what I said. It's a little out of...
But that's where the Admitos is on the meridian.
Isn't that the meteorite?
There's the Admitos. Yeah, that was the bolide. It was called... Yeah, they don't really know what it was, but they think it was a bolide. Bolide is a meteorite that blows up. It's a bolide. And they think it was that. But this is the area to keep an eyeball on in that regard. Alaska did good. Look, they got Vulcanus on the meridian and Jupiter on the IC. The Jupiter Vulcanus thing goes right through Anchorage. So they got Sarah, right? you know? Well, what was it? Did anybody see the Doonesbury from Friday? It was Doonesbury on Friday? Because what is it? The football player's daughter is playing with a Sarah Palin doll, you know, and it's, she pulls the string and it says all this stuff, and they keep upgrading the software so she changes what she says, right? And the wife is worried, saying, you know, our daughter's dealing, you know, thinks that this is, she's really cool. And the husband says, well, you know, she's going to get ready to run in 212. She's got, you know, 4 years to prepare, you know. And the wife goes, yeah, you really want a president who doesn't know anything about foreign policy, who thinks Africa's a country? And the husband goes, well, President Bush didn't know anything about it when he came in. And she goes, oh, I rest my case. You know, it's like, that's not a good thing. So, other things to note. Again, the Vulcanus Jupiter through South Africa, but darn it, look at it. It goes right through the middle of the spot where all the wars are going on with the Congolese armies. What's the real issue with those rebels out there? The minerals, the diamonds, and everything else. They're exploiting and controlling the export of these things. And it goes up through Egypt, right near the western part of Cairo, near Tripoli, and then up through right through Constantinople. So these areas actually do quite well. They actually do quite well, but do the people gain from this? Not necessarily. Not necessarily. All right. So that, you know, that's a thing going on there. We go over to Nigeria. Right, we go over to Nigeria, and we get the Kronos line on the IC coming right up through Nigeria, and Zeus on the other side. Where do you think military intervention is going to happen? You know, like Shell Oil and Chevron, they got their big pipelines in Nigeria, and they had to send everybody home, and they're shut down. Nigeria was pumping, 15% of the world's oil. They had to shut down because the pipes themselves, the people would go up to the pipes, pop a hole in the pipe and start taking the oil because they're starving. And then the mist would come up for miles around, and some guy 2 miles away would light a cigarette and start an explosion, kill 10,000 people. You don't read about it in the paper. And then they have to repair the pipe. And when they come to repair the pipe, they get mobbed.
Oh, yeah.
The people are mobbing them. They can't repair the pipes. They're abandoning the infrastructure altogether. And the military government there doesn't give any help whatsoever. So the people are starving already in Nigeria, right? So they're going to start. There's going to be a few little places in here. Like, you see this little country here? This one? I forget what the name of it is. If we blow it up. They actually have great food stocks. South Africa has great, pardon?
Malawi,
that's right. Very good distribution in there. But you go right next door, right, to, what is it?
Mozambique.
Tanzania. And they're in deep doo-doo. And then you go right up to what's the one where they just had the disputed election?
In Kenya.
And deep crap going on there. The people are going to eat banana leaves for a couple of years. You know? So, all around these areas, this whole horn section, right? This whole horn, so I just keep clicking the thing.
Oh.
This whole horn section, shot. The whole eastern part over here from south of Mauritania down to the Zaire, shot. Right, this whole area here, the whole southeast Rangoon area, right, they're in deep trouble. And of course we know the political ramifications over here. It makes Iraq fall into the background. You know, Iraq was always a mistake. Iraq was always just some neocon's idea of a good time to force the Middle East structure. What a waste. But we all know that.
And make money.
We all know that. Let's grab a different map here. Let's go to the U.S. and we'll just, oops, we don't want the individual states. We just want North America. Blum, bum, bum, bum. What do we want? The whole damn thing. There we go. All right, and here in North America, right, we see the gang up on the East Coast, right, the Mars, the Hades, the Pluto, and the Sun, right, whacking across things right through New York. What happened in New York? They get losing 10,000 workers a week out of the financial industry. It affects everything, but then it comes right up to Boston too. But it's actually north of Boston and north of Boston and north there. What do you have past Route 128? Yeah. Well, it's problematic. It's problematic. It does mean that those industries that are related to finances and stuff like that are really shot. And it's obvious.
A lot of up around 490 for his defense.
Not a lot of his defense, but the defense guys will continue to work because there's the Mars, Hades, and Pluto. Hey, if you're... It's like, look, Neptune's a disaster for most people. But if you're in the film business or a photographer or into the occult or sell drugs, Neptune's good to you. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're in the... If you're under a combination that's a disaster for a financial situation, right, Mars and Pluto and stuff, is a boon to a defense contractor. And remember, Boston has the nice angularity, has the moon right on the midheaven. See it? There it is. And it has that nice, it even has the Mars rising. You get Mars moon, it's a different story. Than
is it, I can't see that. Is it Neptune Saturn that runs through western or west of Boston?
Oh, west, here. It's Mars and the white line and Hades.
Oh, okay.
They cross. This one here comes down as the Pluto line. See it?
And that's more in Virginia Beach.
And that crosses the Virginia Beach, the Baltimore area, and everything else. Okay? We
so
come out.
There that's going to be affected. That's
the whole East Coast. Norfolk, everything else. You know, if you, I just was reading an article about Savannah, that Savannah was had a 20-year boom. It's now cut off at the knees. No trade going through the port. Cut off of the knees. They don't know what to...
Charleston's like that. When everybody else is good, they're bad. When everybody else is bad, they're good.
So now, let's go a little bit further west.
This
right.
is February, right?
This is now.
Now.
This is for the whole year. This is still on... This is the solstice chart itself.
Okay.
All right, so let's go a little further. We go a little further west, and we have the Saturn on the midheaven going right through Little Rock and west of Houston and down through El Paso and the border countries there. Dallas will be right here.
Dallas, Fort Worth.
Right here.
Right above. Yeah.
Right here. Okay. So what it tells us is that the aftermath of that hurricane is still with us. The difficulties that were spurred by that are going to get pervasive. Houston got nailed just about as hard without the flood as New Orleans did. Just without the flood. And, you know, those people are still cleaning up their houses as we speak. It just isn't on the national news every day because, I'll tell you, you know, a 12-foot flood over a 20-square-mile area that was full of houses will always command media attention. But whole neighborhoods that have been out of electricity for 2 months and that sort of stuff and finally getting it back and going to deal with rotted stuff and infrastructure issues, it's just a drag on the economy. And that fits also, it also fits with Carol's thesis that here's the Grain Belt kids, and Saturn should be cold and wet, but it also can be desiccating in many
ways. Right, setting too.
Yes.
And that's the freezing planet.
Right, because here's the, and now the Uranus part comes in out of the middle of nowhere. You know, it's kind of like, well, you know, a lot,
well,
of, com-
weather,
a lot of combines. Yeah, a lot of combines, you know. And then, of course, we have Admetos coming here. And where does the Admetos go? There's our Tijuana, right bang through Las Vegas, right bang through Salt Lake City and Billings, Vermont, Billings, Montana, and then off again. So what happens in these areas? Loss, deprivation. What's happening already in Las Vegas? Lake Mead is down to 30 feet depth. They said Lake Mead looks like a mud puddle. You know? Story that bad. And the Los Angeles thing, that thing about the trash outs I was telling you about, mm-hmm. this is exactly this whole area. It's the Orange County area going down towards San Diego.
And I just saw something about that. The fires and the floods are all like right on top of each other.
That's really going to be something else now. That, you know, all that, the fire and stuff like that doesn't show here per se. In other words, I would have to put up the actual meridian for the Big Sur area and see, you know, what was going on. I didn't have enough time to begin to investigate some of that stuff. All right, let's leave these world charts. Let's leave solar maps behind. Let's come back here. Let's look at a few capitals in the world while we're on the world thing. Let's put up Brussels first. All right, and we're going to go right over here. You notice in Brussels, here's our ascendant. There's our meridian. There's the sun. Pluto is right close to the meridian. The moon is setting over there. Doesn't make too much sense, so we go to the 90-degree dial. Let's throw our TMPs up, all right? And you'll notice now Kronos runs with the meridian for Brussels, and it reflects Mars on the cardinal axis. This is why I said that it looks like Europe's going to have to get involved. Europe's going to have to get involved, you know. It's like the military part of things does affect Europe directly, particularly with the Zeus on the ascendant. Now, note as well, Mercury is running with Zeus. And what does Mercury and Zeus mean? Laws, edicts, and decrees. All right? And there will be a lot of them. It stands at the midpoint of Jupiter, Apollon, and the Sun. Now, the Jupiter, Apollon, with the Moon applying in Vulcanus, this is a lot of money to be made. This is a lot of money to be made. During the crash, Arch Crawford did very, very well because he did a lot of puts on the market. You know, he was buying and selling at certain ranges because they shut off short selling. All those marketeer guys would have gone into short selling. They shut it off. And just like all these things having a boomerang effect, and, you know, if they try and do something, it has the more perverse effect. The effect of shutting off short selling accelerated the crash, because when the short sellers would buy, you know, borrow the stock, sell it, and come back in the market to pay the guy off, it was ratcheting the market down. Money was coming back into the market, even though it was declining every single time. So it acts as a natural brake on the markets. When they took the short selling away, the markets just went right down like a stone in water, you know. So, but there's still tons of money to be made in all of this stuff that's going on. So you got to realize, if you're liquid right now, cash is king. You can go out and buy anything. And understand something else. The dollar now is trading 121 to the euro, right? It's trading at like 129 to the pound. 3 months ago, it was 210 to the pound. And the euro is 146. Right? My daughter just went to Europe. She went to Europe at the point where the dollar was at its highest, you know, its lowest point, literally, right, last March and April, and, you know, she was tough. She was expensive to eat and all that other stuff. She goes to Europe again in the last few weeks, and the dollar is low, and she could buy lots of food and stuff. It was a lot easier. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, you can see the difference is dramatic,
it's
you know.
Amazing. Well, I mean, because I've lived in those countries, and I can remember having American money and it being 249 to them.
Right. Well, this is the now. Why is this? Is because in a declining market, when the stock market crashes or the housing market crashes, it means that it isn't that the prices are dropping because nobody's buying stuff. I mean, that's the obvious thing, but it means that the dollar buys more. You know, you could buy one share or two shares of GM 3 months ago with X amount of dollars. Right now, that will buy you 100 shares of GM. It's the same company. You see? So the dollar gains in value now. So if you're liquid right now, you have your pick and choose all over the world. You know, you can go to a liquidator and buy up a warehouse of stuff real cheap. They need the cash. The gold is right now trading at 800 and such and change after hitting a high of 1,000, right? But platinum is running at 900. The traditional split between platinum and gold is usually 2-1. In other words, platinum is like $1,000 when gold is 500. You know what I mean? It's a very large disparity between the two. They're trading very close. What this indicates is that when the hedge funds and all these other guys drop the money to become liquid, they were in such a panic they couldn't value the assets that they were shedding. They just had to shed assets anywhere they could. So gold futures dropped all over the place. It's artificially depressed. And platinum didn't rise up because platinum is used in industrial applications. Cars stopped being made, and they use these things for catalytic converters. So it's like, you know, less of use. But honestly, if you had a bunch of money, you buy platinum. Because it will eventually, those ratios will eventually kick in again. You know, because they are traditional ratios. So if you have money at this point in time, yes, the money becomes more valuable, but only for a short period of time. Because once the printing presses get going, once the Fed starts printing out the $1 trillion that they've promised out and all that other jazz, it gets tough. Now, why did Congress freak out over the auto guys and not give them a measly $25 billion, right, to keep 3 million people employed, right? and then turn around and give it off, and then go turn around to Citicorp and treat them like royalty. The truth is, they didn't give Citicorp any money. What they went to Citicorp and said, we're going to guarantee $300 billion of your equities. So if your equities fail, we'll give you money then. Right? But you need $5 billion now. Here, have that. The car company said, we need $25 billion. That would have been hard cash right there. So that hard cash, that $25 billion is harder for the U.S. to produce because they got to make the actual dollars than guaranteeing large industries like Fannie Mae and stuff. Because what we're doing is the U.S. government is buying these assets. The U.S. government is holding the paper, but we're not paying for the paper, we're guaranteeing the paper. So that $7.7 trillion isn't spent yet. If the things continue to collapse as they are, it will be spent. And at that point, the world, which monitors how much money we put in, the other reason the dollar went up too is when everybody went liquid, there actually literally wasn't enough dollars printed. Because all this stuff is on paper, electronically. And the people wanted the physical, they wanted the currency in their hand. The printing presses have smoke coming out of them right now. They're going so fast. Putting it out because there's still a huge demand for dollars. So the dollars rise up, the markets sink, but after February, the reverse happens again. So those dollars aren't going to be worth money for long. And remember last year I said to people, one of the things you can do where you could put your money and stuff is an alternate currency with a government that has no national debt and has very good balances of payments, like Switzerland or something. In other words, convert your money to another currency that has a better basis or a better chance of survival than the U.S. currency will. You see? So, but if you're liquid right now, the world is your oyster. Literally. You know, you just can't be too ostentatious about it. But there's laws, edicts and all, tons of laws, tons of edicts. But we see that Europe, you know, we see Europe getting more militaristic. They have to. Look, Kronos and Zeus, right? Big fires, wars, world war, decisive battles, energetic expression of the general will, you know, stands with meridian and ascendant. And that's for Europe. So Europe has its own issues. Europe will get involved as the U.S. pulls back. All right? But the U.S. still has to take the lead this year. Europe is going to become the ultimate leader. The U.S. is the cop. U.S. is the cop. All right. Now, next item to note. Let's go to another place here in the world. All right. We'll go down to Mumbai because that's hot on our newspapers right now. Notice in Mumbai, Mars right on the descendant. Mm-hmm. Boing. Right. And really, what we should be doing is not Mumbai so much as New Delhi. So now, Mumbai shows the Mars setting, right? And if we look at it on the fast dial here. Right, we see the ascendant running with Saturn, the meridian is running with Pluto and Admetos. Right, but if you look at something like Mars and Uranus in Mumbai, it stands with Mercury. But we hear that about in the world, it stands with Saturn and ascendant. So it's just a sad thing. They just, you know, indiscriminately killing people. And we minus the meridian from that, and we come to the Pluto and the Moon. But more important than Mumbai is the capital itself. This shows you the differences between the actual place and the capital in this kind of a chart. So let's go down to New Delhi. I think I spelled it wrong.
No, that's fine.
Right? No, it's D-E-L-H-I. I'm just noticing my own errors here. We go to New Delhi, Uranus on the midheaven. They're surprised by the whole thing. And Kronos is rising. Here. Kronos rises. With Hades, Pluto, setting, Uranus on the midheaven, Uranus, Pluto, revolution, 90 degree dial, we see the MC connect Zeus, the military, to Mars, Kronos, Mars, the guys in uniform, and then stands on the cardinals. So you see New Delhi as the capital, way involved. Did you know they had to take the troops from New Delhi because there were no shock troops at all in Bombay? They had no resources. The local police and the local militia had nobody trained. to deal with this kind of a situation. Yet they were, because, and it's a very security-minded country. They had to import everybody in. They had to bring all those troops in from New Delhi. All right, we go to the ascendant there. It runs between Pluto and Kronos. Actually, we get Sun Kronos stands with that ascendant. And that stands with Zeus and Saturn. Zeus and Saturn rules a fire. General damages through steam, power losses through fire. All right, minus the ascendant would be the place that that occurs. All right, to be endangered by fire. Comrades in fire are in war. Machines are damaged. You know? So we go to the midheaven here, stands with Zeus and Neptune. Again, disasters through, you know, miscalculating a military thing. This is the picture that could let them drop the bomb.
New Delhi dropped the bomb or Pakistan?
New Delhi dropped the bomb on Pakistan, because that's the real danger,
yeah.
Not the other way around. You know? So you see the difference where the one place shows the Mars actually setting for the actual location where the incident occurs, but you look at the capital and it shows the response as a nation. Okay, we go to the next place in our little list here, because we're running through this stuff, is that I considered is Bangkok. Well, let's go look at Islamabad while we're there. Right? And they're all in the same area, and you notice the subtle shifts, and did these guys cause it or what? Look, there's the Sun Pluto setting. Did these guys cause it or what? What's going on in Islamabad this year? Big power shifts. Big power shifts that the world can't ignore. Now you'll note, remember, New Delhi had Kronos on the ascendant. Islamabad, Pluto. Right? The midheaven between Uranus and Cupito. The midheaven here really isn't running with too much. No, it's not doing anything. Here we go. Moon and Pluto. Moon and Admetos. The deep, dark secrets of the night. It's much more their connection in the world that's everything here. See? Kronos, Hades equals Pluto. Development of great evil deeds. The growing great evil. Large failures. Kronos, Hades minus the ascendant. To be involved in serious misfortune. To be dragged into the evil matter by others. To suffer great damage through the meanness of others. That's why I said, it's not Islamabad bombing India. Islamabad will be blamed for the Indian thing, and if they have show more, you know, more Neptune type of stuff, then New Delhi will bomb Islamabad, and that won't be very happy for the rest of us. And listen, now, you guys who have come to these things enough do know that I do say good things. This is a bad year. And it's not a good thing to make bad predictions in astrology. It really isn't. Because, you know, they might come true. You know, everybody, you know, there's always futurists out there, astrologers, wonder, oh, well, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. You know, and it's like, penny, penny, the sky is falling for every little type of thing. Well, the sky is falling in that sense. This is one of those things, and this is, you know, we're midway in it. Let's take a look at two more places. Two more places.
Fight your face, because India's basically downwind of Pakistan.
It doesn't matter. They're not thinking that way.
I understand they're not thinking, but in the bigger scene, it's going to cause...
Both. The whole thing is a mess. The whole thing is a mess. Let's go to Bangkok, Thailand, because here we have that little revolution going on there. And we see Mercury is setting. And what do they have tied up? The airport! Transportation! Right? But there is a revolution going on in this nation. Literally. You know, they're all mad at the prime minister. Right? Even the king. Even the king. And they love their king. Right? But here, it's all going to hinge on the military. And the military is pro the demonstrators. See it? Meridian Zeus. Right? Meridian Zeus. Stands with Sun and Sun and Vulcanus. They're forced. It's a forced situation. Vulcanus forces things. You know, the ascendant itself. I don't think it's doing a lot. No, it's not running with much. It's running with Poseidon. It's not a big deal. That's right. The ascendant's running with Mars. There will be a point where there will be deaths and there will be standstill. See, that's still happening there. And that's to the minute itself. Now, Mars and Saturn itself, right, is our general indicator of death and destruction, sickness, separation, death, unemployment, general interruption of work, seasonal work, general periodic working, right, minus Poseidon, right, is disruption of a mental activity, mental sickness, manias, right? All right. Now, next item would be Bixing, because they suffered the earthquake, and they're going to suffer some more stuff. And you note that the node sets in Bixing. All right, the node sets in Bixing. We go up to the 90-degree dial. Bixing stands with the node and Poseidon. Cultured place. All right, will there be really rotten earthquakes and everything else? No, the people are satisfied at Mitos Jupiter. You see, there's a place where things are literally working. Okay. Mars with the ascendant, with Jupiter and Admetos, is to be satisfied with the way things are, even though there's a general decline in the markets, because Mars and Admetos is a decline in the market that is accelerated through the Jupiter. The meridian for Bixing, right, is standing with Neptune, so their pollution issues are going to become very, very bad, and this is one of the places where water is going to be a very big issue. Water will be a big issue. All right, let's get out of all of this stuff. Let's just go back to the U.S. We're coming down to the end of the wire here, but we got a few things to do, and there's a couple of things I just want to show you guys technique-wise before we shut it down and open up for questions. Let's get rid of all these charts. Oh, that's Washington. What else is here? Oh, Boston. We don't need Boston anymore. Okay, here we are back in the good old USA. A few things to note. Notice that the cardinal axis has Mercury and Cupido on it. Right? Mercury and Cupido means singing and dancing. Literally. And it stands with Venus. Right? So, we get the idea that shows like, So You Think You Can Dance, and American Idol, and Dancing with the Stars, and all this other jazz, they reach their peak this year. Well, the inauguration occurs with the moon void. That's another reason why they don't get to do anything. But yeah, their bus is going down and all that jazz. In other words, the people can have a good time.
Right.
They're still going to know how to party. You're going to still hear of things like that going on. But it all stands with the Mars and Kronos. The government's always watching right now. The governments are watching. Secret things are going on with these ideas all the time. Now, I'm not talking about what's coming so much in terms of a few years from now, outside of what I've already discussed with you guys. But just note that one is happening. The other thing to note is that Neptune is going to be crossing Admetos this year with Jupiter. And Neptune Admetos is, it's like the end of a Neptunian thing. It's the end of a mystery. The truth comes out. Things are told. We're going to hear a lot of stuff, outrageous stuff that has occurred will come to light, particularly when the Jupiter gets down there during those eclipses in January and February. That's going to be running between the 25th and 27th. Yeah, between 25 and 27 in Aquarius. Yeah, it's hot to try.
That's not January, isn't it?
No, it's going to. It comes in from January through about March when it turns around and starts coming back. It's that era of time starts kicking in that combination, right? Of course, the Jupiter will pass. The Jupiter and the Moon will pass all of this stuff, so they're actually at the end of their cycle. The other thing to note that's going on, of course, is the Saturn-Uranus oppositions. The next Saturn-Uranus opposition takes place at 22 and a half of Pisces Virgo, which is Obama's Mars.
Oh.
So, as far as I'm concerned, he's walking around with a big bullseye on his back. And, remember I mentioned at the other thing that I still feel that Biden's going to become president.
If
he survives the if he survives the end of February, beginning of March period, right, he's got good longevity. But there's a very good chance that some wacko is going to whack him. There's a very good
thing interesting on the news about some guy submitted a Freedom of Information request about energy weapons that belong to the Secret Service, and they said, oh, that's top secret. It's going to take us a long time to redact all that and send you the information. So it's like they have like ray guns or something like that, or at least microwave weapons or something like that.
That's the Pluto Cronus with the Hades and everything. It's that Hades is the secret stuff. Hades is that stuff that you don't see all the time, you know?
What is the pattern that you said comes
in February? All right, well, let me just finish up here. A few things to note, right? The Saturn and Uranus, of course, will be our controlling interest through the next 9 months, mm-hmm. right? Then that Saturn gets ready, after it turns around, gets ready to start crossing the cardinals. And it's going to cross the cardinals into the Pluto, then Hades crosses the cardinals, and then Uranus crosses the cardinals. So by 2010, it gets pretty grim. The picture we'll look at now is the same one I showed you guys when I spoke in Boston in September. What we're going to do here is we're going to lock us in. If you put a picture up in this little box in Chart Wheels and you right-click on the equals, that means that that picture gets tracked. So we're going to go down here, and let's go down and go to a one-week intervals. And you watch this Pluto on Hades. Right, as we go in, we're in the end of November. This is the date, and then you'll also see the date. Look at this date up here. This is the controlling date on this. So let's go week by week and just follow this as if it transits. Watch the dial, watch the pointer, and bang, we're on the cardinals. Right, starting in March, the end of February. Now, the position of that pointer is at 29:55 of the mutables. So this is its position. This is the date. All right? And you can see it visibly. And watch the position as we go week to week. And how close it stays to the cardinals. It doesn't get more than 10 minutes away.
Right.
Notice that the one goes direct while the other one's going retrograde. And they do that dance all the way up through October. We finally get more than 10 minutes away. And it begins to break. And then at that point, what is going on is the Saturn's getting ready to cross by next November. That's virtually a year from now. So it means that from February through October, things go to crap. Now, this is that dilemma that I talked about in the first 5 minutes of this talk. My knee-jerk reaction says, oh, it's more financial stuff, terrorists in the world, and everything else. But my predictions from many years ago, coming into this time, when I did study this stuff at leisure, right, says, no. Pluto-Hades is deep change in the Earth. Deep, deep change in the Earth. And I feel that, essentially, we're going to see volcanic material, earthquakes, and literal plate movements that are going to be what we won't be able to respond to. So, these are the issues in the world. Food, Southeast Asia, Africa, right? That's number one. Two, earth changes, and they're not global warming type changes. They're physical earth changes that humans have nothing to do with. The first indicator of this was Krakatoa in 1883, because it took 100 years since that volcano blew for the plate underneath it to shift. The plate shifts, the tsunami happens 2 years ago. That 100 years is a blink of a geological eye. Once that plate moved, it allowed the Hindu plate to crash into the Himalayas a little bit more and cause the earthquake in Sichuan. As they're all following through. The other ramification from that plate moving is New Guinea, Indonesia, New Zealand, and Chile, right, are all now active. All the volcanoes, they are all becoming active. Yes?
Central America, too.
They don't know what it is yet, but even Arkansas is having
that. Oh, the Arkansas quakes. That's the Madrid fault. And what happened there was this was the San Joaquin plate. The one is a plate off of the coast of Washington, Vancouver.
New Madrid fault.
Right, that's the New Madrid fault. Right, but there's a plate off of in the Pacific, off of Washington, Oregon,
the biggest earthquake
That's
right. Well, there's a reason for this. This is the thing. It's important. You got to go back to the plate that's off of Washington and Vancouver. Vancouver and on the West Coast, right? Because what's happening here is the Atlantic is spreading, right? The Atlantic is spreading. That's been spreading for a while. I mean, since Pangaea, they've been pulling apart. I looked at the rocks in New Jersey and the rocks in Sweden and saw the two edges of the same cliff. The two edges of the same cliff. I grew up on that cliff in New Jersey, and when I was over in Gothenburg, Sweden, and standing on the same cliff, it was as if I was back home again, and I had the same feeling, and I have a strong admetos, I could touch those rocks and know that. You know? Right? So the Atlantic is... The Atlantic is spreading. It's pushing the whole U.S. continent into the Pacific. The Pacific is a weak basin. It subducts under the U.S., right? The plate goes off, the plate that went off of Washington was 300 tremors that were so deep they couldn't figure them out, because they can only figure them out if they're in solid rock. They were at the boundary between the magma and the upper crust. So it was really deep.
This came up in one of our discussions in my other groups about, not astrology, but that Wyoming, you're talking about the New Madrid and you're talking about Washington, but we were talking about Wyoming.
Let me continue. Right, that plate happened, right? After that swarm, right, they had over 300 earthquakes as a swarm in Reno, Nevada. They were small, but they were continual. And they couldn't figure it out. And it was, and then after that swarm, the Madrid plate moves a little bit. The idea here is that North America is moving into the Pacific, hitting the stuck plate is that plate off of Washington that's preventing the whole subduction on the west coast of the U.S., just like the Sumatran plate was preventing India from crashing into China. So as this thing moves, there'll be a sudden jostle. And when that jostle occurs, the earthquakes begin to relieve. Well, the volcanoes relieve themselves in the southern part. If we get more than four volcanoes going at the same time at one half the rate of Mount St. Helens in terms of material going into the sky, we have a photosynthesis problem. The upper atmosphere gets too many particulate matter, and we get less sun. Now, of course, they had that. What was it? After Krakatoa, they had no summer. In Britain. Great sunsets, but no summer. Right? Well, a similar thing will occur here, and the consequence of it will be the fact that the grain harvests are down, and if it's acerbated with a drought, it gets even worse. I figured that there would be between a 15 and 30% drop in crop yields, and it will be irritated by the fact that so much of it is supposed to go to ethanol, and they're going to burn the ethanol because they won't be able to sell it. They won't be able to... Remember, the corn that's grown for ethanol is not the same corn you can eat. You know? So it's got to go, and they're just going to burn it away, throw it away, you know, that sort of thing. So that's the upshot of this period. And as these things move, and places like New Zealand and Indonesia and all that jazz are really feeling the brunt of it, we've already blown our wad. The U.S. will not have the wherewithal to do anything. Europe will take the lead.
That's interesting, because I did see something that they were saying that global warming has a bigger effect on earthquakes than you might imagine, especially
right
up near Alaska and that fault line that comes down to Washington.
Well, yeah, and the thing, right, and the thing about, yes, because the ocean expands a little bit,
yeah,
and the crust expands a little bit from the heat, just that little bit. This is all it takes a little. But this has been going on since the 1880s. The 1880s, the event started. Now, Krakatoa has built itself up to close to 80% of what it was after the first explosion, which is phenomenal. When Krakatoa goes, it usually goes in cycles of, 600,000 years, and really is massive. You know? They consider the 1883 one not to be anywhere near as massive as previous Krakatoa explosions. Right? So the fact that the volcano is really building up again means there's more pressure to relieve, and instead of it having one giant explosion, it's protracted over a couple of centuries. All right? But Krakatoa is the controlling volcano for most of these plate shifts. It's turning, you know, Krakatoa, and what was it? The other one is the one in Yellowstone, but that one's also on a 600,000-year cycle, and it's also due.
Right.
Now, honestly, if Yellowstone goes, well, if you get news of it before you die, you could kiss your butt behind.
Here over on the East Coast, too?
Yeah.
Oh, it's
bad. All the way through.
It's also not on the East Coast so much, but I think
we get the fallout. We get the fallout. Yeah.
You know, has predicted Armageddon, like, in a big way. And she set up this settlement, and she moved all of her people.
Well, that's the one to the west, yeah. But they're in the wrong spot.
They're on the fringes of Yellowstone.
Yeah, they're in the wrong spot. Yeah, it's really bizarre. It's like I was listening to some folks saying, oh, we should go to Sedona because Sedona will survive. Sedona's in the middle of the desert, you know. It's like, come on, these are not places they're going to survive.
Colorado is what the whole thing about Colorado, and that's where all the military dumps are.
Yeah, that's where
Colorado is.
No, you have no choice. It's too late. You're here. Yeah, you're here. Here's the advice for the period is this. The advice of the period is this. If you haven't gotten out of debt and gotten your financial situation settled at this point in time, you're in trouble. But if you have done those things, if you do have your debt handled and that sort of stuff, you will survive well. You won't do as well as you did for the last 20 years financially, but you will eat. Your family will survive. Things will grow. Like I said, there's a lot of singing and dancing going on in this chart.
The people that don't have money are going to sit back and watch us get fatter?
No.
They're going to kill us for
No, they won't do that either. There will be riots and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're going to be riots over different things. They're going to be riots over situations where... Over toys, literally. When the secrets start getting revealed, the people will be really mad. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Wait till they close Guantanamo, talking about secrets.
Right. Well, we won't have a revolt here in the U.S.
Okay.
No, there'll be a military clampdown. There will be a military clampdown. Police state. No, that's Mars. That's the Pluto. That's the Pluto. Here, go back. We're done with that. Right, we can go back home. Right, no, that's the Pluto, the Kronos Mars. Look, well, let's do it again. Kronos plus Mars is the power of the state, police, and authorities, and it stands on the cardinals. Minus Hades, which is going to come into this whole thing, is loss, danger, injury caused by the authorities, to be murdered by the power of the state, false measure by the state, reprimanded by the state. And that's where all, and notice what degree is that all coming into? It's where Pluto makes its next station.
Which is what degree?
That's at about 2.5 to 3.
So we won't need a police state through.
We will have a police.
We'll have one, whether we need it. Sometimes you need it.
It's already in place. Right now, if you go outside to most cities, right, and slap somebody in the face, 5 cameras caught that. 5 cameras, you know what I mean? The control and command situation in the U.S. has already been done. It's already in place, but also elsewhere in the world. These things, don't you know what these things have built into every single one of them?
A
unique ID and a GPS. You know, that's why in the new spy movies and stuff, the first thing that the guy goes is take the cell phone and throw it away. You know, because you can get tracked right through your cell phone. This is a tracking device. And on one hand, it's a marvelous machine.
That's how they save so many kids in that.
Yeah, it's a marvelous machine. But on the other hand, just like anything else, it also holds the potential for great, great bad news, so to speak. So
this new demigod, Mr. Obama, that I love so much, is going to be saving any first time tonight. It's all bullshit.
No. He really wants to do stuff. But can he? It's like, you know, there's a store on the corner, old man Schmitz has been screwing everybody for 10 years, right? We're going to get rid of that old man Schmitz. You take over the store, and the guy emptied all the shelves. You see what I mean? And there's nothing there. So what do? You go to the community. Oh, quick, everybody give us stuff so we can help out. You see? The best they're going to do...
So much people are at their end.
Yeah. Well, basically what occurs with Obama and that regime is the fact that they won't have the wherewithal, so they become a benign holding company. It's holding things together as best they can. They at least the one good thing about the Obama regime will be that at least they'll have the common man's good in their heart. But whether they can do anything about it, compassion is one thing, but helping out is another. You know, they've got the compassion.
Gary, yes. You mentioned when secrets come out.
Yes.
Elaborate on
that will happen. No, that will be happening in February era and March when the January, February, March when the Neptune hits the Admetos.
What secrets?
Federal secrets, stuff going on that's been withheld from us. You got to realize. Look. Throughout the entire time that Bush has been in office, Neptune made the half square to Kronos, which is inability in ruling circles. The general public lives under the wrong impressions, is kept there, so the wrong impression is increased. This was written in 1923. All right? Yes?
I know there are a lot of people who are interested in kind of the 9/11 truth campaign.
That might come out as well.
Yeah. When you look at
JFK.
9/11, if you look at the picture for 9/11, do you see that?
Yes. Yes.
More deception than the violence when I first.
Yes,
that.
But you see, you don't. What's weird about the Neptune stuff? When you see the strong Neptune in those kind of pictures, is that strong Neptune there because they were taken off a left field and they didn't know how to respond right, and all the chaos and confusion going on, or was it because there's some mastermind going on there pulling the strings? Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, every time there's a big market move or anything like that, there's somebody profiting. Every single day, no matter how bad the chart is, Jupiter still operates. Remember, the first thing I said, hey, look, Moon's coming to Jupiter, and Venus is half square the Sun. On the face of it, it looks okay. On the face of it, this is a sunny day. But it's a sunny day with bad things happening all the time. You see?
It's
so that's
a sunny day.
Yeah. 9/11 is a perfect thing. It was a beautiful fall day, perfect temperature. You know, I remember. I was. They were all out and about. I was in New York that July, just prior to it. I was down at Jenny's place in New York, and New York was swinging. And the cafes were happening, people were partying in the streets. You could go to sleep on Times Square and nobody would mug you. You know, literally. And the place was great. And then 9/11. And it's just not been the same. It's just gotten grayer and grimmer. So, all right. So for you guys during the course of this year, you know, the things that you're going to do, there's the macro world, there's the world of the great everybody, and then there's your micro world. And of course, your micro world, every single micro world is different. As I said, there are people that will profit from all of this stuff, and there will be people that will get hammered from it. We're not really in a place that's going to get so hammered as other places in the world. And because we have, you know, most of the world's resources in our pocket, as bad as it is, we will survive okay to some degree. It will be difficult.
Having a stop next millions.
Where are they going to go? They're going to go to Bioki's? You know, I mean, the thing about the Mexican folks is they're not going to be starving as much. They grow good food. Did you know Mexico is one of the places where I would put money because they have no national debt. They got great oil. We're going to be closing. If you say a couple of minutes, Carol, we're going to be closing up in a minute.
I know. I have to go.
Okay.
All right. I can't drive too well in the dark.
All right. Well, it looks dark out because we got the thing.
By the time I get home.
By the time. Okay. Take care.
So when it becomes about food, everything else goes the basic. Food becomes the...
Food in the North American continent won't be so bad. It's that the farmers will be losing money because they'll be burning half the crop because they can't sell it, and the other half of the crop they'll be getting big bucks for, but the government's going to come in and say, wait a minute, keep a third of that for our own people.
Yeah.
Gleaning? It's called gleaning the field.
Yeah, it used to happen in the medieval ages.
Yeah, the medieval days. So here's the thing. So the main issue is, if you weren't prepared up to this point, you know, you have my compassion, because it's going to be harder for you. But if you did prepare, if you did get your debt levels down, if you aren't speculating in weird-ass areas, if you didn't put everything into your 401s, and you stayed out of debt, you will survive. Even if you lose your job, you will survive. And plus, all of us, you know, we're all kind of gray heads kind of thing, you know, our world is behind us, literally. Once you're after 45, your world is behind you. You know, it's getting towards the end of the productive levels. No. In terms of starting out in the world, it is tough for the late 20s, the early 20s, and the 30s. You know, that's those. They're like the ones that got nailed by the Depression, and that's where that will happen. So, you know, those things you guys have to just keep in mind is, you know, just gonna clamp down, hold on. Now, things like astrology. Things like astrology do very well in this era. Uranus and Apollon is astrology, and it runs right with Jupiter and runs right with Neptune. I mean, we're going to do okay. You know, literally, we're going to do okay. Even in the U.S., the good things happen. You see, stroke of luck for several people, lotteries, fortunate circumstances. Well, actually, I did the wrong one. I did Jupiter. It's Apollon and Uranus there. There we go. That's much better. The general world waits for a decision with great tension. The general world is expecting of things to come, but it's also the same combination that rules astrology. We do okay.
We
know astrologers do okay. You know?
We'll be hungry, but
no, we'll eat. We'll be able to sing for our supper. How's that? That's a good way to put it. All right? All right, now, last things, I just want to leave you with what it is that the people that are getting readings, what it is I'm actually doing for the readings very quickly. If your sun is, say, at 5 Gemini 57, and let's suppose your solar arc were 47 degrees, right? What I'm doing here is I'm adding a sensitive point where the sun would be. I'm leaving this as a static chart. I move the sun by the solar arc, right, 47 degrees, and then I move it forward at a weekly rate, approximately a minute a week, because 1 minute a week, 52 weeks, approximately 60 degrees, one full degree, which is one full year of solar arc motion, and I'm moving the progressed sun through the combinations of the solstice chart, week by week. So week one for this person would be Kronos node. Oh, you're going to connect with authorities this week. You're going to have to deal with connections on a high level. The people that you work with are going to be of a much above average level, and you love them very, very dearly during that week. We go click ahead here, right, to the next week. There's week one after the solstice, week two after the solstice, week 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 6 and 7 weeks after the solstice, this person would have the difficulties. You're going to have a standstill at Venus and Saturn. Things are going to be held back. You have to wait things out, etc., etc. This is how that reading will go. And in general, I'll also be taking a look at the horoscope and doing a quick glance on the current transits to the natal. But you'll notice all I'm doing here is putting in the natal sun and the solar arc. That's all you need. I used to walk around, I've told this story many times, when I was in my early 20s, I'd have Fowler's Ephemeris in my back pocket, and I'd go to the bar and hang around, and everybody knew I was the astrologer, right? And some people would come up to me, and all I needed to do was just ask the day they were born, so, and what year. I could figure out their solar arc in my head. If they were born in the summer, it was 57 minutes a year. If they were born in the winter, it was 61 minutes a year. I'd figure it out in my head. Oh, you're 22 years old and you're born in the summertime. Oh, solar arc's about 21 and a quarter. I'd look in the ephemeris and look for openings from that natal sun to different planets at the 21 degrees. And if I saw Venus coming due to the sun and it was a pretty woman, I'd buy her a drink. If I saw Mars Saturn coming due, I'd say, you got to buy me a drink for the information, you know. That kind of, but you could do extensive predictions on very, very simple things, and it'll work very well. But this is when you work with a static chart, a lunation, an ingress, a return. All you need to do is take the natal sun plop it into that chart for a general statement, and then move it by the solar arc, and then just move it 1 minute a week, 1 minute a week until that chart fades away. All right, so in the case of a lunation, that would be 30 days. In the case of an ingress like this one, a major ingress, really 11 months, but I go to 12. Right. If you do an equinox pass, the sun going into 0 degrees Aries or something like that, 4 months. All right, it's effective. The chart is effective. So static charts have an effect, you know, in that way.
That's the same way with eclipses.
And the same thing with an eclipse. You do the same. You time them all the same way. It's a very effective method, very well worked out. All right, questions, and we'll close.
I want to ask a question.
Yes. Yes.
I was surprised with the Bangkok chart, because it's an ingress chart, which is yet to come, and already shows...
It's operating. This chart's been operating for 5 weeks prior.
Six weeks prior, yes.
Okay,
so that's why it shows the ingress.
Yes. Okay. Then one of the things, right, Valerie always wants me to push this earlier and earlier, because she says, you know, these things start coming in before you even talk about it, you know, as they're building up. We have a current event, and it's showing in the chart.
Wow. The report is here.
Yeah.
Okay, so you do it 5 weeks. You think it's
5 to 6 weeks prior. Okay. On the yearly one, it's very valid. Yes. Yes.
You didn't see too much about China really having a collapse, but they have all kinds of...
Pollution problems. Pollution problems and corruption problems. The Neptune was real prominent there. But for the most part, the people have the meridian was between the node and Poseidon, which means that they get involved with their culture again. China goes back to its original roots in many respects. All right? Other questions? Nothing? Don't be shy. Speak now or come back next year. What?
December 21st,
2000. That's going to be a very... I hope we're all here and have a good time to do that one. But I do consider that period, the end of the Khatun, the Mayan Khatun, to be a changeover period, but it's the bottom of the cycle. It's not like events are happening then. They're happening before then to create the bottom, and then it goes up. Right. Right. Well, one of the things to note that when we go through the galactic center, it won't be for another 250 years. All right. We're not that close to the galactic center. It's still at 26 degrees of Sagittarius. It won't be for another 250 years. But in 250 years, Pluto will be at zero Capricorn again when we do go through the galactic center, and it will have an effect, big time. Anything else?
No.
No, what predictions?
Ice cap melting, the new Northwest Passage, and rising sea levels. Don't worry about rising sea levels. No. No, that just means some guys with real estate in New York City have problems. But as far as Cape Cod and Boston and all that jazz are concerned, our land mass is actually rising faster than the sea because of the glaciers. They compressed everything. The glaciers went away, and we've been rising faster than the sea ever since.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, especially on Cape Cod and the islands. Anything else? Yeah, you got to remember, if the waters rise, and say they rise 3 or 4 feet or something like that, you have to understand, it doesn't affect people. It affects people who have infrastructure and real estate holdings,
like
you know. Yeah, the house falls in the water. You're built too close to the water. Yes.
Any more things with UFOs? There seems to be a trend, but any news in that area?
Towards UFOs? That might be some of the stuff that's revealed. That might be some of the secret stuff that's revealed. But I think it's going to be more political. Is that the UFOs, I think will probably become more prominent by the end of 2010, when the Saturn, by the end of 2009, when the Saturn and Hades cross. Saturn and Hades means aliens. Literally. Look, Saturn and Hades. Famine, epidemics, deep damage, unemployment, sad pairing, damage through force, fugitives. But in the old, if you get your book out, it'll say aliens, right? Yeah. Boom. Right. And when Wayne Buher and myself and several others were doing a study into that stuff, we were looking at was Whitley Strieber's work and all that other jazz. And yeah, we were looking at all that stuff. Every chart had Haiti Saturn in it. Every chart. So it was like, not only does it rule refugees in the sense of people crossing the border because they have to or whatever, but it also rules any kind of alien, anything off Earth, anything that's unusual.
Well, we keep thinking of aliens like the Mexicans coming across the border, but it has many meanings.
It has many, many, many meanings. I'm not sure. See, the thing about that, well, see, the thing is, I don't think that they're here per se, and I don't think they're coming in ships and stuff. I think it's more psychic connections between different worlds. And my sense about it is that they got very interested in us and started showing up after 47 because we set off nuclear bombs.
Some of them are probably friendly, and some of them aren't.
Yeah, you see, it was setting off the nuclear bombs. You see, fission doesn't exist in the universe. You don't break atoms. Fusion exists.
Right.
Suns work through fusion. If you do a fission thing in this universe, everybody takes notice. It's like a bright light through the whole universe in many respects. Even though it's a little bomb here. We destroyed matter. Forcibly converted it into energy. So that's where I think the rest of the universe took notice of us. Yeah, right. Read it.
Okay, Saturn Hades is melancholy, trouble, sadness, the alien, refugees, serious obstacles, severe sickness or unemployment for long durations, enemies, and serious loss, prison. Yeah.
Enmity. Now the thing is, that Saturn Hades does come in at the end of this year. The Saturn starts crossing the cardinals, and that's, like I said, we hit bottom in 2:10, 2:11. This is a year of declining. Now I didn't talk about any of the out of bounds planets on declination. There's a lot of stuff I didn't talk about. I didn't talk about the eclipses or anything like that. We stayed with this chart. Yes.
CIA operations.
Mars Hades. Secret police. Secret army.
That's the main combination.
Oh,
of
yeah.
Mars Hades.
But Kronos plus Mars minus Hades. Kronos plus Mars minus Hades is a pretty neat. That's the one that got Vita thrown into jail. Because the Gestapo was reading it out of the book and they said, hey, you can't see this stuff.
Mars. Kronos, is that what you're...
Mars plus Kronos.
I'm slow, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
There you go. And then you want to...
Minus Hades.
Grief through independent women or officials, poor, dismissed officials. And the main part is noble-minded. Well, if you just do...
Noble-minded.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong thing. Mars, sorry. That's good. Yeah, that's what we have with things.
Of course, they've been doing their thing since the 50s.
We all do it.
Well, it's always the Secret Services and governments.
Okay.
Everybody has their secret side, including entities like corporations.
Loss is caused by the authorities to be reprimanded or destroyed by power of the state. That's Mars, Kronos through Hades. Is
right.
That what you wanted?
Yes. Now, look at Kronos Hades minus Mars.
What is this book you have?
This is
Vita.
It's the book of rules and
pleasure.
W-I-T-T-E.
This is our Bible, as far as I'm concerned.
What's the name of it again?
The Book of Rules for Planetary Pictures.
Okay, I'm still...
They sell it here at Astrolabe. They can buy it anywhere on the... I still buy it. The AFFA sells it as well.
Okay.
Kronos? I'm sorry. It's dark in here.
Well, go to Hades.
I'm sorry. That's right. Hades is first. That's why I'm having problems. Hades? Thank you.
Do the other one. Thank you. That's right. We should turn that on anyway. We're at that point. Everybody slowly wake up.
When is your birthday?
May 17, 1951.
Hades, Kronos, through...
No, just Hades, Kronos first.
Okay. Great basement and meanness, poverty and want, poor government, plainclothes police. This is the basic formula for a criminal on a big scale. And then you said through
minus Hades. I'm a minus Mars.
Minus Mars. base acts of the boss, the superior, or the government to be in the hands of the detective force, mass murder.
That's in play.
Yes. Right. What was it? Mars plus Hades minus Kronos. Here's the Mars, Kronos. You see the Hades is running through the whole thing. You see it? And Pluto's going to come in and make the complete picture. It stinks.
And when you use this on
and
a
we do
person,
it this
you
way,
have to
you notice it stands with Uranus. Look, the Mars, now to see the Mars Hades itself, if we take the Kronos off, which is one of the pictures we were reading, Uranus comes in, which is the sudden intervention of the government, and it all lands with the nodes. There's a lot in this chart.
Were these present at all on 9/11?
Not really.
On 9/11? 9/11 is Neptune land. So, if it were these things, it would have been at that time. Yes, we could
but
put 9/11.
During the election. So, if this was McCain, we'd be saying, oh my God, it's McCain and Palin. Maybe it's O'Connor.
Oh,
maybe
it's No.
You're not allowed to say that. I don't like the guy.
Well, no. It wouldn't be that. No, you're allowed to say it, but it wouldn't be that. You see, it isn't as if a regime comes in and they immediately turn a switch and things happen. Okay? In other words, they inherit stuff. Just like Truman put together the CIA, it gets inherited by Eisenhower, and the first thing Eisenhower says is he gets out of office and says, oh my God! This industrial complex is going wacky,
and
right? And then Kennedy comes in and he uses the CIA for Bay of Pigs, and they say, "Screw you! What a stupid idea! We're not even going to help you," right? So you see how the CIA starts running things, right? The CIA gets used again in a big way in the Vietnam War, so now they're militarized, right? Then the next thing comes along, right? We get to what's his name? Carter and that stuff. Carter starts taking it apart. And they say, well, screw you. We're getting you out of office really fast. Reagan comes in. He starts building them up again. You see, so it's a continuum. It's a continuum.
Bush ran the CIA.
That's right. That was his claim to fame. He ran the CIA all through the
70s.
They all inherit this stuff, and then they carry it forward.
That was going to be one of my questions you just brought back up. The secret that comes out, Obama or...
Secrets, plural.
Yeah, but Obama accidentally or on purpose let something out to the media
that causes
all the problems?
No, it won't be accidental. There'll be someone discovered. No, it'll be ripped open, right, and just blown out there, and they'll have to respond to it. But you got to remember, I don't think Obama's going to make it.
I don't either. He's got a Neptune hit. In his natal chart, Neptune squares his Sun and Mercury.
Well, to go into politics, you have to have Neptune. You have to have these pictures. You know, listen, to go into politics like that is either you go into politics in a very Rockefeller patrician way, right? Where I have great wealth, as part of my duties is to help others, or you go into politics in the sense of what I call the cock on the dunghill. The rooster crowing while standing on a pile of shit.
There you go. That's a good.
You know? It's like, look at me, look at me, look at me. That's the reason they're there. You know? Like with Obama, the big question was his family really had to go through trials and tribulations whether he should even run. Because he's coming from the more patrician mode in many respects. He didn't have to run. You know? Whereas McCain was coming like, look at me, because the guy hangs out with media stars all the time. He loves it. He loves the attention, you know, the kind of thing. And he's a very nice guy. He's a nice guy, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what else do we need to go over here? Oh, you want a 911? She wants to see, whoops, what did I do? I just got rid of that one. Let's go, let's grab a chart. Let's grab a chart. Let's make it for New York. All right, let's go New York, right? It was 8:45 or 8:48, right? 8:48 a.m. And it isn't until later. But that chart's interesting because that chart is a chart that unfolds. The actual hit happens as one event, and then other events follow as the minutes go by. It's just like a whole bunch of raft of stuff. And that was, I think it was. What was the date on that? 9/11?
2001. Yep.
All right, we'll just throw that up there. I don't even need to name it. All right, see, pretty chart. Yeah, pretty chart.
Everybody, and that's it.
Pretty chart, right? And again,
high, Venus high.
Mars on the one, you know.
Libra.
Not a very pretty chart. But let's look at it in this way, the way that I analyze it. And we'll go right to the 90. It makes good sense. Right? We throw the materials in here, and what do we see on here? Kronos right on the cardinals, right? As the event is unfolding. The interesting combination here is the Admetos Uranus, because Admetos Uranus, literally in your book, because these are different interpretations, look that up while we talk about this, stands with the Hades and Vulcanus, stands with Mars and Jupiter, and the Moon and Mercury. Moon and Mercury is public transportation, Mars and Jupiter is success, Hades Vulcanus is great mean acts, Admetos and Uranus means to flatten and crush.
So it wasn't just Neptune.
Oh, no, Neptune, but Neptune pervades this chart. Neptune does pervade this chart.
Sudden rupture.
Right. See, the Neptune, watch, you'll see the Neptune is in a half square to Hades. So that picture of Vulcanus with Neptune is also Vulcanus with Hades.
So read what you have here, Gary. It's kind of interesting. The general public
is under the impact of violent connections or events to be separated from the general public through shattering events.
And
but
this says, sudden rupture like separation, shock, commotion, destruction through convulsion, earthquake, to break off, to break up, to break down, to tear up, rags, murder.
Right. And minus, I think on the what's the minus on that? Would be minus the Hades. Minus Hades from that combination.
Minus the Hades was surprisingly sudden great need and want. Sudden grave illness caused by lack and privation. Grave stomach and intestinal ailments to detect and uncover secrets.
Great. Now, by the way, before we break up, because people are petering around, if you've contracted with a reading for me, I will need your address. So make sure that Renata has your address. All right? We need to record addresses. And also, it would be also a good idea to put your email address there as well in case events are coming up down here or something like that. It's easier for me to notify people. That's all. No, just tell her if you want to do that. That drops your cost from $25 to 15 plus 75 for the reason, so you're at 90. All right? Any last questions? Because we got to shut down. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, let me shut this.
I think we can try and use that for recording.